Thank you very much indeed, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and the influential think tank, a proper one, not one of those secretly funded lobby groups in the environs of Tufton Street, but the one that ran Keir Starmer's leadership campaign, is canvassing party members on a possible replacement. We'll have a little look at that later. But we begin with that story, the one that has been puzzling us, engaging us, obsessing us some mornings for what feels like a very long time. The phenomenon of young people who aren't doing anything with their lives, or at least on paper aren't doing anything with their lives, and the political necessity of turning the oil tanker round. Let's dive straight back into that first.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is due in London for a mini-summit at Downing Street. He will meet Sir Keir Starmer and the leaders of France and Germany as he continues to face pressure from the White House. Donald Trump has claimed his Ukrainian counterpart hasn't read the latest plan to end the war with Russia. Mr. Zelensky says he is awaiting a full update from negotiations in Florida.
I expect detailed information from them on everything that was said to the American envoys in Moscow and on the nuances the Americans are prepared to modify in negotiations with us and with the Russians.
The UK is stepping up plans to protect critical undersea cables and pipelines from attacks. Warships and aircraft will be bolstered by autonomous vehicles and AI to help detect Russian submarines. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, has told LBC that Britain must be able to match Moscow's capabilities.
We know the sort of threat that Russia poses. We know the big investment they're making in to try and develop it further. And we're determined not just to match that, but to make sure that Britain, working with allies like Norway, can remain ahead of that threat.
Ministers say an expansion of apprenticeships will benefit young workers and businesses. They're aiming to reverse a 40% fall in young people taking up the training opportunities over the past decade. About 50,000 people could benefit from an investment of more than £700 million. Reform UK has rejected claims it breached electoral law in Nigel Farage's constituency. A former member of Mr. Farage's campaign team in Clacton has reportedly submitted a file to the Metropolitan Police. He's claimed the Reform leader failed to register some expenses. Hundreds of books have been damaged by a water leak at the Louvre. It's the latest setback for the museum in Paris, just weeks after thieves stole priceless crown jewels in broad daylight. About 400 books will have to be dried and restored. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down a point at 96.66. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, but cloudy in the south of England. Showers continuing across Northern Ireland and Scotland. A high of 14 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
It's the most important time of the year. Festive sarnie season. So let's get serious. And Subway knows there's only one way to do it. The Subway. Start off with a sage and onion stuffing top bread. Yep, you heard it. Stuffing. Bread. Succulent rotisserie style chicken. Crispy bacon. Cheese and toasted, of course. If stuffing bread wasn't enough, how about even more stuffing? All that with a hearty drizzle of cranberry sauce. Told you we were serious. Get serious with the unrivaled ultimate festive sandwich. Now at Subway.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10, a very good morning to you. Should we start with the easy one? This is a beautiful missing word round to start the week. Are you ready for this? Wild blank seen in Norfolk for first time in five centuries. Wild blank seen in Norfolk for first time in five centuries. This could have a very deleterious effect on my inbox. Possibly your search history, but I'm saying no more than that. An extraordinary development in the United States over the course of the weekend with a foreign policy statement or a foreign policy plan that, I kid you not, could have been written by the Kremlin. Don't take my word for it. We'll get Simon Marks's expert view a little later in the programme. Why do you think the word sausage is in the news? You may enjoy the discovery of the answer to that question. And how worried should Keir Starmer be about news that a think tank that was instrumental in propelling him to the leadership of the Labour Party is now asking members what they think about a possible replacement. So, numbers are fascinating, aren't they? Was it Mark Twain talked about lies, damned lies and statistics, and you sort of know why. You can get them to do anything you want if you are so minded. But here's the crucial one. In the past decade, the proportion of young people not in education, employment or training has doubled. It's gone from about 4.5% of the 20 to 24-year-old population to about 9%. And it's a very big deal, particularly for two reasons, which are almost impossible to separate, despite, of course, the fact that the direction of political traffic in this country at the moment ignores the fact that they are almost impossible to separate. Growth and immigration. We need growth. There's a piece in the Financial Times today by Martin Wolf that is, absolutely chilling in its cool-headedness. But the failure, essentially, from 2007, 2008 onwards, from the moment of the global financial crisis right up until today, the failures of various governments to address this properly, or indeed to get the right answer to a difficult question, instead of making everything worse by introducing, off the top of my head, austerity and Brexit. But the necessity of growth is one of the few things upon which everybody agrees. Unfortunately, there seems to be still some argument about whether or not it can be achieved with a shrinking workforce or with an offer to potential taxpayers and earners that is less attractive than the offer being made by other countries. So we really, really, really need these young people who are already here to discover or to... we really need them in work. We really need as many of them as possible in either work or training. Every 18 to 21-year-old under the plan announced today who has been receiving benefits under Universal Credit will be guaranteed 6 months of paid work, with the government picking up the full bill for 25 hours a week. I want to be excited about this. Let me be completely honest. I want to be excited about this from a place of deep concern for these young people. Empathy, sympathy, concern, not anger. I mean, I'm sure some of them are choosing to spend their lives playing Ghost of Tsushima or, what's the other one I've been playing lately? Indiana Jones and the Grand Circle. I'm sure there are some young people who've managed to persuade mum or dad or both that they don't really need to leave the house. They're keeping the costs down to a bare minimum and they spend their lives online doing of course, I'm sure there are. But that does not explain the phenomenon to which we have now turned our attention on this program many, many times. The pandemic was probably correlation is not causation, but you'd have to get up very, very early, I think, to persuade me that it's not linked at all. The pandemic was the period in which these figures rocketed most and rocketed fastest. This rise in young people not in education, employment or training has jumped since the COVID-19 pandemic. So although the figures compare statistics, the real driver of this, the real catalyst of this appears to be something that happened during that period, during that very, very poor period, which we discovered yesterday, saw the Conservative government waste about £11 billion of our money on dodgy contracts and, a little bit more on that as well later in the programme. One of the reasons why we couldn't quite work our way into this story when we started talking about it, is because there is no simple answer to this question. And that should have been obvious to us from the start. Maybe it was obvious to you, and I'm doing that dreadful thing I do when I make a mistake. I impute all of us having made the same mistake. But you may remember me admitting to you, actually, I'm almost sort of confessing to you, that I didn't feel we were getting this conversation right. And you can feel it. You can feel it as well when we're getting something right, when we're discovering things that we don't already know, when we're plotting a course that resists the siren lure of just identifying a section of society in a confusing situation and just attacking them. Very popular, great business model. Loads of people do it on a daily basis, but it doesn't really help anyone or improve anything. But we weren't getting it right either. And I couldn't work out why. I would speak to the occasional parent about why the young person in their life wasn't doing anything. But I was frustrated by the failure to identify what you might call universals. I was frustrated by the failure to find Rosetta Stones or skeleton keys that would unlock the entire topic. That someone would ring in and say something, and you and I would both go, whoa, of course, that's what it is. And there is no such thing. That this is why it didn't work. There is no such thing. I mean, it's not going to quite be a different answer to the question of why is this person not in work for every single young person who is not in work. But there might as well be. There might as well be. So we can find themes. Do you know, Eleanor and I were trying to work out what the word is to sort of turn homogeneous into a noun. And we failed. Apparently the word is homogeneity. But I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. The problem is, of course, that there is no homogeneous truth about these young people, about these 16 to 24-year-olds who are... And, of course, as you've already noticed, the numbers hop around a little bit, but we're essentially talking about under-25s. There is no homogeneous nature. There's no homogeneous phenomenon. I find you, all of the... people who fall into this category, and I then dedicate an hour of your life to trying to find out what they all have in common, and that's why it never worked, because they don't necessarily have anything in common. We could find a few thousand of them, maybe 100,000 of them, and they might have something in common, but there are going to be a million different answers, metaphorically speaking, to the same question. So, the government is expanding its apprenticeship scheme. 50,000 young people will benefit from that. That figure has dropped by almost 40% in the last decade. They're removing the 5%. This is quite dry, but bear with. They're removing the 5% levy on apprentices for under 25s, offering new apprenticeships in AI, hospitality and engineering. Some will be in the defence sector. Other people face the possibility of losing whatever benefits they currently qualify for if they do not take up the offers that are being put in front of them. I can live with that. As long as, you know, genuine mental health anxiety disorders are taken into account, the difference between can't leave the house and won't leave the house seems to me to be crucial and rather hard to police. But if a decent offer is made to somebody who is currently lacking the motivation needed to get out, then it seems to me fairly reasonable to deploy at least as much stick as carrot in trying to get them back on their feet. You may disagree. You know what to do if you do. The suggestion that this is about breaking the seal almost, breaking the cycle is probably a more felicitous phrase. So just helping young people who get stuck on a treadmill of lethargy or a treadmill of inactivity. So you might leave school determined and presuming you'd be in work. And then a month later, you've been a little bit surprised by your failure to find work. But a year later, you've become a slightly different person from the one when you left school or college. And you're beginning to think that this path is closed to you. This is what I mean about there being a million different answers to this question. Okay, here is an under 25 who has applied for 200 jobs and got none of them. Here is an under 25 who has applied for one job and failed to get it, and gone into a sort of existential spiral about the pointlessness of everything. Again, I've got sympathy for both of those people. Probably a little bit more for the first person, but that is pointless, because if the challenge is to get them both into a job, then the levels of sympathy are irrelevant. Here's another young person who hasn't really applied for anything, because mum and dad are keeping them relatively sweet, or they're making a little bit of cash trading online on Etsy, or maybe even commoditizing some content and making a few quid out of that, although that seems to me to be the modern equivalent of thinking that you were going to be a pop star or a football player. But there is another young person who has had a job and it didn't work out. There's another young person who has applied for 10 jobs and not got any of them. And then there's another young person who hasn't applied for any jobs at all because they're determined to make it as an actor or a writer or a content creator. So this notion that there is a Rosetta Stone, a skeleton key that a government can come along and insert into the lock or crack the code, and suddenly there would be tidal waves of young people not currently working rushing into the workplace to avail themselves of all the opportunities that the government is now masterminding or offering up. But I really want it to work. I don't want young people languishing on universal credit when they could be doing jobs. But none of us know. None of us know. Well, except, of course, the people who do know, what the reason is for that person there to be inactive. And that, oddly, given how often I hit you over the head with the preference I have for lived experience over sort of unbased or unfounded opinions about videos you've never watched, for example. Don't let that hold you back from having a very strong opinion, whatever you do. But the idea that your lived experience is more valuable than a pungent opinion based on literally nothing has always been self-evident to me. But, on this occasion, I think the opposite is true. I just want to assemble as many answers as possible to the question of why you or the young person in your life is in this category. And I'm fairly sure that if we could get, you know, 500,000 of them lined up, we would feel sympathy for almost all of them. That's why I would much rather have a Labour government addressing this problem than a Conservative government, who always seem to come from a position of everybody is leg-swinging, everybody is taking the mickey, everybody is lying, everybody is pampered, everybody is back in my day. And there might be some truth in that, but bottom line on this is the young person you know. So two ways. I'm getting a million people instructing me on how to pronounce homogeneous. Is that homogeneous? Is it not homogeneous? Is it homogeneous? Look, this is all a waste of I don't know. Anyway, there isn't a simple answer that applies to everybody. And I just want to know why. So two things. How did you break the cycle? Well, actually, no, there's a million questions here, isn't there? Because I'm addicted to the universal. I can't resist the universal. What is the big thing that government or society misses? Is it the lockdown? Is it COVID? Is that broken something for a huge number of young people that apprenticeships and removing universal credit and hitting them over the head is simply never going to fix? Something mental, something psychological, something about that relationship with reality that got fractured and blistered when reality turned into something none of us recognised. How would we even know that? 03456060973. But the key question seemed to me to be, what is going on in your world? What is this phenomenon when you break it down to the individual that you know? Talk to me about why you are currently not in education, employment or training. And I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to learn from you. But also tell me why your daughter is, or your son, your grandson, or your nephew. Why is the young person in your life part of this, and I'm going to call it a problem, despite the fact that I don't think they themselves are the problem. Why are they in this category? Why are they part of this problem? And don't think that your answer is obvious or that it's not worth ringing in, because everybody knows. I want to hear as many different answers as possible, because I don't think we can begin to wonder about whether or not the government's latest proposals are going to work until we know what the problem is that they are aiming to solve. So do that for me now, please. I think the word hopeless has got a big role to play in this conversation, but I don't want to put that word into your mouth. I want you to bring it to me as a real and present problem. 03456060973. And then the second question is, what would break this cycle? What do they need? What would make a difference? And we can compare your thoughts on that to the proposals the government is unveiling this week, in so far as we know what they are. So how do you end up? How did you end up? What is it like to be in this situation? And what has or has broken the cycle or might break the cycle? And this is not a program where being born in 1972 means that I think the world still bears any resemblance whatsoever to the world I inhabited when I was in this age range in the sort of early 90s. The world has changed beyond recognition, and that is going to be a huge part of understanding this problem. I want to be absolutely clear about that. If you're going to ring me to tell me what you did in 1954, seriously, put your tuppence away, put your shilling away, because this is about 2025.
0345 6060 973.
LBC.
Take the world's best snooker players. One of the most unpredictable seasons. Add the electric atmosphere of Alexandra Palace. It can only be the 2026 Johnston's Paint Masters. Could it be Sean Murphy, Judd Trump, Neil Robertson, or world champion Zhaozing Tong who takes the trophy? One thing's certain. Nothing beats the Johnston's Paint Masters. Live. Enjoy our biggest ever fan zone. Watch in style from VIP sofas. Book now. WST.TV/tickets.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060 973.
21 minutes after 10, another headline in the news today, probably pertinent to the conversation we're having. First-time buyers are older and more indebted than ever before. So I stand by what I said a moment ago about my experiences in the early 90s being irrelevant to what young people are going through today. I really do. I think it's something that should be chiselled into tablets and put above every studio door in the land. But it might be helpful to chart what the biggest differences are. Just looking at that, I've said to you before that Mrs. O'Brien and I got a 110% mortgage on our first flat. We're watching old episodes of Location, Location, Location this weekend. Do not ask why. So it's a long and complicated story involving a winter vomiting bug. But one of them was roughly the time that we got our first flat. And the way in which the world has changed is absolutely extraordinary in many obvious ways. But what about the unobvious ways? I don't know what it would be like to be thinking, what's the point? I'm going to go and measure inside legs, for example, until I can get a job in journalism. If I don't get a job in journalism, the career I might have followed measuring inside legs, working in menswear, retail, I would have still been able to. I don't know. I just want to know. What are the big differences between then and now? What is it like to be caught up in this constituency of young people? And what might we do to break these cycles? Rory is in Edinburgh. Rory, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello, Rory.
You know, When I saw this report yesterday, I actually woke up this morning and I thought, I really hope James talks about this because I feel so I'm actually on a very, very similar scheme currently operating in Scotland that's done by the Scottish government. And that scheme is essentially allowing young graduates who are unemployed or underemployed into a 6-month placement within local authorities to get some work experience where they've previously been rejected. And I found it uniquely helpful in allowing me to sort of build my own professional development and also just get me out of that sort of death doom scrolling spiral that you mentioned after being rejected from positions.
And what were you paid while you were doing it?
So I'm still on it right now. So I've actually asked my boss if I could step out for a couple
fantastic.
Of minutes so
thank
I could
you.
Talk to you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
well, thank
absolutely,
you both.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I'll give her. I'll mention to her about this.
So what do you get? Who remunerates you?
So I'm actually getting paid. This is from this scheme is called No One Left Behind, I believe.
Okay.
And basically the government, the Scottish government, give a flat sum to local councils essentially to then pay these employees, and we are paid on the living wage, not just the minimum wage, but the living wage. So we're paid a good amount, and it's not as some people think when they think of these schemes where they think, oh, it's basically voluntary or you're being paid apprentice wages. No, you're getting a full wage as much as you possibly could be, and that's been incredibly helpful for me with my own financial situation.
Why were you not? What happened to you previously? How did you find? Because I sense from your tone, really, that you were quite surprised to find yourself in this situation. So how would you account for it to someone who was a bit sceptical, to someone of the, you know, pull your socks up brigade and don't look at the facts, just feel the feelings.
So I'm sure many people will tell you already that currently, in particular degrees in the humanities, it can be awful difficult to find jobs. I've noticed that there's a lot of rhetoric around sort of, oh, why are you doing a history of art degree or something like that, you know, these types of conversations. But I did my degree in politics, for example, and I'm currently working in the Museums and Archives Service, which, while tangentially related to politics, isn't necessarily something directly related to my degree. So it's something that's giving you transferable skills in an environment different from what you graduated in. And that's incredibly helpful for me because it's allowing me to learn new things. And it would allow young people who are maybe in a position where they are thinking to themselves that they don't feel they could do something different to what they want to.
Here's my problem. And you're brilliant. Well, let me read you what William has said already in response to your call. Intelligent, articulate and passionate. I'd hire this guy in a heartbeat. What a great example. That's you, that is. Stick that on your CV and smoke it. All right? And I know exactly what he's talking about. From the minute you came on the radio, you sounded engaged, you sounded enthused, you sounded informed. I don't think we're thinking about you on a day like today. We are thinking about the doom scroller, possibly the doom scroller that you used to be, but we're thinking about the person Pat McFadden has in mind when he tells Sky News doing nothing should not be an option. That's something you probably agree with. But what about the person who has ended up in, whether they've been lulled there or whether they've rushed headlong into it, into a position of hopelessness, into a position of losing faith, if you like, in a system where success is unachievable in their mind?
I think so. I would the way I would answer that, I think, is compare how I'm speaking today to maybe, and I'm not asking you to remember a previous call that I've had, James, but on a previous conversation, I think the last time we spoke was a couple of months, more than a couple of months back, on, I think it was on digital ID or something like that, or verification. And I remember on that call feeling quite angry, quite jaded, quite annoyed. And I think that spoke to my general, I mean, it was a topic I disagreed with, so therefore I was going to be passionately against it.
Of course.
But that my general sort of feeling, my mood, compared to how I am now, I think, you know, it sounds like a sort of capitalist slogan in a sense, but to say that work really can make you happy and improve your mental well-being, something like this can only help.
And that is, I think, priceless, because that is almost impossible to get your head around if you're part of the In My Day Brigade. And I am. I'm very much in danger of being part of the In My Day Brigade. But, you know, if you haven't done the things that we did, if you haven't done a paper round, is always the cliche, but worked throughout college, it's much harder to do than it used to be. And that simple idea, if you've never done it, I'm about to get a bit dewy-eyed and talk about the empowering nature of work. But, of course, if you're doing, and Rory does not sound like he's drudging, so it will depend on what the work is. But it does do something, and maybe it is just a little seed that needs to be sown. And then the system can start to water it. But I don't know. I mean, you do. You sound hopeful, and you sound engaged, and you sound enthused. And I really hope you still do in 6 months. But what in Britain is giving these people, these young people, hope for the future? That is an almost impossible question to answer. And for Emma and other people getting in touch with me today, it's at the very heart of the problem. How do you give young people hope when they have none? And telling them to hop onto a hamster wheel, which won't actually lead anywhere, including property ownership, is not necessarily the answer. But thank you. 28 minutes after 10 is the time. Claudia is in Wolverhampton. Claudia, what would you like to say?
Hello. Well, my daughter, she graduated 3 years ago, 2 years ago.
Yes.
We were very proud because she graduated on a Wednesday and she had a job lined up on a Monday, kind of in her area. She did product design, and everything was good. We were all very excited. Her partner didn't get a job, ended up on Universal Credit.
Yes.
Now, a couple of years, a year and a half later, my daughter decided she wanted to quit her job because she didn't have time to even see the place where she lived, and she felt she needed to decompress, and
right.
and she was traveling a lot, and she did. She quit her job without having another job, and now they're both on Universal Credit. And she's been looking for jobs, but now it's like, oh, I can't find anything in my area of work.
So her expectations, I mean, this is tricky, because you can tell someone their expectations are too high, and you're sort of telling them not to aspire. But there is a massive difference between doing something and doing nothing, and she has elected to do nothing. How comfortable is her existence, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, now basically, the way it was is she saved up. She's very thrifty.
Right.
So she saved up. And for the first 3 months, everything was fantastic. You know, they're going to concerts and everything.
Yeah.
But now the money is running out. And now it's like very difficult because, you know, they live in a nice place, in a nice part of Manchester. So the housing benefit part of it doesn't cover the rent. So they're having to make all these kind of sacrifices.
So they're going to run out of road eventually, are they?
They are. They're going to live very miserably.
And then what do they do? And then what do they do?
Oh, well, she doesn't know, but it's just too hard and she can't even think of it. The problem is all these, I don't know what happened, because sometimes, James, I feel like I'm in another planet.
Yes, I understand what you're saying to me.
Because I started working at 14. I studied, I've got a degree, but from 14 I had something going on. My husband the same, my son the same. So she was brought up in this kind of we always work. But now it's almost like, and please, I suffer from depression. I've had mental health. I've got all the sympathy.
Of course.
But it gets a bit too much. It's like, but it was too stressful. And I remember saying to her, but darling, get another job, you know, get a risk.
Life is stressful. Right? And this is the heart of it. This is the absolute heart of it. So if I take the first two calls, Rory would recognise what your daughter is living, but he would also, and this is a happy thought, he would also recognise that government plans, government policies can actually break these cycles, but she kind of broke her own cycle. Is it this concept of choice? So I think about this, and I felt, when I saw that line from Pat McFadden, doing nothing should not be an option, doing nothing should not... And for us, it was. This is a difference in generational outlook.
Yeah.
And it's not.
It is.
It's not. What. It's not. Can't. It's won't. Your daughter could have carried on doing what she was doing before, but she elected not to.
Yeah.
Does she regret that yet?
The problem is there is the choice. No. Well, she's too proud. She's like,
yes.
But it is a choice. I think you got the nail on the head there. It's that thing of, you know. Oh, I can quit my job and I will not starve.
And she will.
So I'm just going,
age plays a part of it. This is not the heart of the problem. Of course it's not, but it is going to be relevant. This is what I mean about being open-minded enough to recognise that every answer to this question is relevant. The ones that we like and that engender enormous amounts of empathy, and the ones that we don't like so much. And as a mum, Claudia's going to hate this scenario that she finds her family in, but it's relevant. And that idea, the problem is that we did do it. I was reading about Manny's passing last week, the bass player in the Stone Roses, and that era in Manchester, huge numbers of young people were on income support and housing benefit while waiting for their careers to start, waiting for their lives to begin. I was one of them myself for a very short period of time. And that choice, I mean, they would say, and I would say, we weren't doing nothing. We were dreaming big dreams, and that's why we have such enormous affection for the people whose dreams came true. But that idea that at day one, you got to get into the rat race. There's no wiggle room. There's no liminal space. There's no pause in life. You're in the rat race or you're not. And she got into the rat race. And I think it's pertinent that Claudia mentions concerts and things like that, because you would sort of, is this it? It's like a Kinks lyric. I don't know. It's all there. It's all here. And there's room for more. There's room, in fact, for you. Here's Thomas Watts with your headlines.
The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is due in London for talks on ending the war with Russia. Keir Starmer will host the meeting with Mr. Zelensky and the leaders of France and Germany at Downing Street later. Ministers say more funding for apprenticeships will help to provide the skills employers need. Ministers are aiming to reverse a 40% fall in young people taking up the training opportunities over the past decade. Reform UK has denied claims it breached election spending rules in Nigel Farage's constituency. A former member of Mr. Farage's campaign team in Clacton has reportedly submitted a file to the Metropolitan Police. LBC weather, dry with some bright spells for many, but cloudy in southern England. Showers continuing across Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
TRIP. Think, do the four trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
Think about cheese. Make your thoughts cheesier. Now add 100% chicken breast fillet, chipotle sauce and a mega cheese melt. And it's giving the new cheesy chicken stack at McDonald's. Did we mention it's cheesy?
Cheese.
Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different. Should be fun. All wobbly. All wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
What's the point, is the question, isn't it? At the very heart of all of this is why it's taken me such a long time to cut to the nub of it, because it's not a question that ever really occurred to my generation. What is the point? So by all means, make it a necessity. Remove any means of state support, and then people will have no choice but to take whatever work they can find. But that way, the collapse of civilization lies. That way revolution lies. That way let them eat brioche or let them eat cake lies. So there is always a balance. It's what society imposes. Another front page today, urging everybody to join a union. We may have a little look at that later because, rights are hard won and only ever temporary. But what's the point? So this is the absolute crux of the generational divide. The absolute crux of it. Is what's the point? And I never had that. And I don't think you ever had. What's the point? Well, the point is that if we don't work, we don't get. What don't you get? Well, we don't get on the property ladder. We don't get any sense of security. We don't get nice things. Well, I'm not getting any nice things. Or I'm not getting on the property ladder. So I've got more chance of getting to Mars than I have of getting on the property ladder. What is the point? And then that, actually, listening to Claudia talking about her daughter, what is the point of actually doing the job? So there's another person on our mythical palette of people who came out of college, got a job, and then knocked it on the head because it wasn't fulfilling her needs or it wasn't doing the things that she expected it to do. But the thing it wasn't doing was providing her with a standard of living measurably higher than she would have got, and that's not because benefits are too generous, it's the opposite, it's because wages are too low. And if you don't believe me, then just reflect upon the fact that none of the people who are profoundly frustrated by their inability to get on the property ladder, despite working very hard, are unemployed. They are all, by definition, working very hard. Jack's in Elstree. Jack, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James.
Hello, mate.
So I'm going to start with telling you about my best mate, and then I'll tell you what I think the problem is.
Okie dokie.
So my best mate, we're all 27 now, and he went to university, did a good degree, has come out of university, and all he's been able to do since then, we're 27 now, okay, is just temporary bar work for maybe a decade now.
And he has, you watched him shrink?
He is a shell of his former self.
Breaks
when
my
we
heart,
came
man.
Out of school, he was the most amazing guy in the world, and now he has no confidence. He still lives with his mum. He can't do any. He's applied for so many jobs, and he's got so many good qualities that he just can't do it.
Yeah.
Now, this is what I think the problem is.
Go on.
I think that there's a cultural issue in the UK, and I think what it is that we don't. In the US, I think it's different, but I don't think we reward industriousness and proactivity in young people in the same way that other countries do. Because my friend sees all of us who are relatively successful,
right.
Okay,
yeah.
But none of us. So you know, you choose your subject at uni, and that's it. That you do your subject, then you have to try and get a job. In that, you've made 300 applications. None of them are the job that you actually wanted because obviously those have all rejected you. And then you're stuck in a job after uni that is kind of related to your degree, but not really,
yeah.
Not really what you ever wanted to do. And it's a bit above minimum wage, so it was hard enough to get that as it was. And now you're stuck in it because if you try and go into a different job, you can't uphold the same standard of living that you had. So you're doing your very best. You go above and beyond, and then the person
and you're not
who's
moving.
Been there
so you're
longer
so you're,
than you,
you're pedaling furiously, but you're barely moving at all. It's like a fixed gear bicycle.
Literally that.
Right.
You know, you're doing your very best, and the person who's got more experience or been there longer than you gets the promotion, regardless of whether you've done more work or
so
made
again,
the company
so
more
this
money
is
or
brilliant.
Anything like
I
that.
Say brilliant. It's not brilliant. It's bloody awful. But in terms of my intellectual quest this morning, it's brilliant because you are in a good job, and you are saying,
yes.
"What's the point?" And you're certainly,
no
if you're not saying it yourself, then your friend is looking at you and thinking, "What's the point?" Even though his own experiences
Absolutely.
Are breaking his spirit, have broken his spirit, the idea that it's worth, you know, finding that extra reserve of energy, sending out, inviting more rejection, it's worth it because the difference between where I am and where I could be is so huge. But if the difference isn't huge at all, you're both saying, what's the point? What's the point?
Absolutely. He sees that all of us who are in, you know, good corporate jobs, we don't get rewarded for going above and beyond there. So right now in my job, I've in the past year created all of these AI tools that are saving the company thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds. But they just want to hand it over to some consultants. And they said, oh, we're going to hand over your work to some consultants. You're going to stay in your role. You're not going to get a pay rise. You're not going to get a title.
Why did I bother?
Change,
why did I bother
nothing.
Doing that extra
Why
bit?
Did I bother? So he sees me going above and beyond, and he says, well, I'll just stay in temp bar work.
So where's he going to end up, and where are you going to end up?
Oh, God knows. I mean, I'm going into a startup, so they might
okay.
reward me a little bit better, I don't know. But
yeah.
him, I've got no idea.
But you're moving around, and you're in the game. So what's your view, then, on the job that the government would help your friend get, which wouldn't necessarily pay him any more money, but it would give him a sense of structure. It would give him a sense of, because you're not sufficiently disillusioned to leave it entirely, to do what Claudia's daughter has done or to join your friend behind the bar. So there is
yeah.
still a difference between your experience and his, your aspiration and his, but you used to be on exactly the same peg. So what would getting into a more structured, a more formal working environment, could that do something for him or not?
Someone's just got to give him a chance.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Even if it isn't a life-changing sum of money or a life-changing income, it is saying, come into this space where you need a different skill set. Nothing wrong with working behind a bar, and some people are happy to do that for the rest of their lives. But your mate isn't or wasn't, and if he could just feel that his brain was being exercised in different ways, it might break the cycle, you think, or not?
I think it's the nature of university where
yeah.
at 17 you're made to pick your life. You know, I had to pick biology, and that was it.
And did you think you would be a biologist?
I thought I would be a research scientist and I'd go and get my PhD, and that was that. But now I find myself held back. I should have really done pharmacy, where I could then go work in pharmaceutical companies. No one knows that they will prioritize a PharmD degree over a normal BSc degree, okay? And things like that, you know, no one tells you that. So I thought I was going to, at the very least, I'd be able to go work for a pharmaceutical company. But my degree is useless for that. They won't take
me. And no one told you, and that speaks to a different conversation about because if I'm making a list of things that are massively different from when I was 27 and the world that you inhabit, I think one of the things I'd put on the list would be the specific nature of degrees, the way that people think their degrees are very specific to work and that will lead them in. I don't think my mates thought that. I'm pretty sure my contemporaries didn't think that. Even at a school like the LSE, which is, you know, social sciences, and I guess the bankers knew that they were going to take their economics degrees into the city, but almost everybody else would have had a much broader horizon, and the idea of doing a degree for the sake of learning or knowledge for knowledge's sake. I think that's a big difference generationally if we are trying to map those things. But I'm going to cling to my optimism that people like Jack's best friend would benefit from having this. But although he, of course, is not a NEET, is he? So whether or not he'd qualify for it or not is currently in the laps of the gods. You see what I mean now, don't you? A million different answers. Finally, we found our way into this conversation, and it's not going to provide us with any neat conclusions, but it's certainly providing us with a lot more clarity. A million different answers. For every young person, there will be a slightly different set of circumstances explaining how they've ended up in that category. But even if they're not in that category, I mean, could we do a phone-in on that? Like, literally come on the radio at 10 o'clock in the morning and say, what's the point? Tell these young people who can't really aspire much beyond a living wage for the foreseeable future in their lives, who aren't going to be able to buy a property. One great dad message came in while Jack was talking that really caught me. It's from David. I worked a Saturday job, and he concedes at the very beginning that he is indulging in a little bit of in-my-day-itis. I worked a Saturday job, and with it, I could afford a gig, a ticket, the train in and out of Newcastle. Today, my daughter works a Saturday job in a cafe on minimum wage for under-18s, and what she earns will not cover anything. It won't buy her a gig ticket or even a night out. The cost of living really does make these kids think, why bother? And that's from a loving dad whose daughter is doing what she can to get a few quid in the coffers. So whether it's why bother or what's the point, that's what's missing. It's missing from the conversation, and it's missing from the government policy. And that's because it's a bleak question. What's the point? Why bother? What's your answer? We'll do that. We'll do a phone-in on that, and we'll do it sooner rather than later, but we're not necessarily doing it today. It's 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Nigel Farage has said, well, the BBC are hypocrites because at the time that I was not racially abusing people in a direct way at school, they were showing Bernard Manning and his half Hopma. And in that press conference, I think you got an example. It's one example of, I'm not sure whether Nigel Farage is yet ready to become the Prime Minister he thinks he can be. That was not good. He lost it, didn't he? Just answer the question. You've got to find a better answer than that, because that was embarrassing.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with...
Think. Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
While all the Whos of Whoville were at McDonald's eating, the Grinch from his lair started plotting and scheming. Gherkin-flavored fries and odd socks will send them crackers. So try the Grinch's new meal and head down to Macca's. Until 4th of Jan from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary while stocks last. Grinched for adults.
When you buy a BMW-approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Every investor has a future in mind.
Whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany, the hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:49 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Shall I reveal the missing word round? An extraordinary high number of people got this right, which is quite gratifying. It's a lovely story. Goodness knows we need one. Wild blank, seen in Norfolk for first time in 5 centuries. What could possibly be, there's a clue there, in that space? Wild what? Wild blank, wild what? Seen in Norfolk for first time in 5 centuries. And the answer is beaver. And rather felicitously, have you noticed I've fallen in love with the word felicitous? I think only about a month ago, 5-6 weeks, if you had some sort of AI bot tracking this programme, I'd be fascinated to know how frequently the word felicitous has started appearing in my contemplations. But rather felicitously, this is a part of the country I know rather well. It's a nature reserve called Penthorpe, which is near Fakenham in Norfolk. They used to do Springwatch there. They used to do the Chris Packham show there back in the day. But it's an Eden. It's a veritable Eden. If you like birds of the ornithological variety, then Norfolk itself is glorious. North Norfolk especially is magnificent. And Penthorpe is a wonderful destination for an awful lot of migratory birds that you would struggle to see otherwise. And it's very water-based. But they've got no idea how they've ended up with a beaver. It's the River Wensum which runs through it, all the way to Norwich, or from Norwich. And because they've got cameras everywhere, is this really boring? I spent quite a lot of time at Penthorpe looking for an otter in a hide. I sat in a hide. Mrs. O'Brien and the kids were off doing something much more exciting, and I just took it upon myself to go to Penthorpe. And I've always wanted to see an otter in the wild. I have never seen an otter in the wild. I've seen otters in captivity, but I've never seen an otter in the wild. I'm very oddly smitten by otter. This has gone full Partridge now. Imagine if someone had just turned the radio. What's he talking about? He just wants to see an otter. I thought we were going to be talking about, I don't know, Donald Trump having his foreign policy written by the Kremlin. He's talking about otters. I spent a lot of time in a hide hoping to see an otter. But I didn't. Spoiler alert. But that's why at Penthorpe they've got all the cameras in place. So there might be beavers living in the country elsewhere that just have not been spotted yet, although the signs are pretty clear. Living in an isolated and almost impenetrable area of the reserve for about a month. There's plenty of tree cover, and we think it might be travelling into the adjacent marshes hunting for food. They're nocturnal vegetarians, beavers. It's the name of my first band. And they have no idea where it's come from. There have been no reports of released beavers from beaver sanctuaries or missing beavers from other habitats where beavers were known to be living. The best bet is probably that it's a naturally dispersing wild beaver. So 10 wild beaver populations in England at the moment. They keep it on the down low, otherwise people like me would turn up with their binoculars. But unconfirmed and just glorious and a rather splendid missing word round. Keir is in Newham to steer us back to the phenomenon of not being in education, employment or training. Keir, what made you pick up the phone?
I called actually a little while ago when you talked about this last. I kind of wanted to add some flesh on the bones for why some of the reasons why I think a lot of young people are finding themselves out of work, employment or training. I wanted to do it from the lens of my sort of experience. So I've I graduated in July, and I grew up in East London. I graduated in July and then really struggled to find a job. I'm working now as a postman for the time being.
Okay.
But it's certainly not what I thought I'd be doing with my degree once I'd left university.
Sure.
And it did kind of instill a frustration in me because, we're taught to go to university, get your degree, and then you get a good job. So when that doesn't happen, it's sort of, I've just put myself in loads of debt. And why?
Yeah.
And some of the reasons when I'm sort of looking into it that for why. So about half of grad scheme jobs or grad jobs, about half of them are in London.
Yes.
For each position, there's about 140 applicants.
That's mad.
And so it's just so competitive, at least in the capital.
Yes.
And there's been a massive COVID backlog of grad schemes that were put on hold until after the pandemic that we're still sort of having to filter through now. And more recently, with some rise in national insurance contributions by employers and just a general turbulent, unstable economy, employers just aren't wanting to hire as much, and they're cutting the employees that they currently have. And obviously, the first jobs that get cut or that stop being hired for are the low level, the ones on the bottom rings of the ladder.
And the ones that can be replaced by AI as well. I don't want to add to your burdens, but the law is one of the areas where my friends and contemporaries are telling me that entry-level positions are literally disappearing in plain sight every day. Because
exactly.
The stuff that you would once have done can now be done by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and that was another thing that now where you need maybe 10 staff to do these admin jobs, now it's only two that oversee the control of artificial intelligence. But it's also, even the application process now for a lot of jobs has become almost like formulaic, algorithmic. A lot of employers will use an AI to screen all of the 140 applications that they get,
yes,
to filter it down to the ones that they want to pay more attention to. So I find myself having to really look through job descriptions and trying to find the key buzzwords and trying to kind of bypass that AI screening. But the other thing that I think I wanted to also touch on is that a lot of people, it's not just me that has this kind of feeling, this disillusionment with working and you know, doing a job that you perhaps don't like, for the time being. A lot of my friends experience this too. And I think particularly when you come from working class households in really quite deprived areas of London, the story, the public story, the narrative about how things are, what the standard of living is like, throughout our entire childhood, it's just been bad. I mean, it was austerity, and then it was Trump won, and then it was COVID, and then it was a war in Ukraine, then it was Liz Truss. It's just all these cascading
Brexit.
Sort of unfortunate Brexit. Yeah, there we go. It's all of these things sort of cascading. It's just created this sense of disillusionment, particularly among people that I find from my demographic. It is just this kind of, what's the point?
You're dancing around what's the point, aren't you? I know you just said it, but what do you have an answer to that question, Keir?
Well, I think, honestly, not a simple one, to be honest. I think everyone has to find their own point and kind of try and chase it. But I can absolutely understand that people who particularly people who are from disadvantaged backgrounds, I can see how they can see their parents could work a sort of, like the text you were reading out, you can do a Saturday job and hopefully one day put down a deposit on a house or work in retail or something, hopefully put down own some property one day, but that's not even possible anymore.
I think it's the relationship. Every call is about the relationship between effort and momentum, or effort and movement. And if you feel... That's why I don't know where the analogy of a fixed gear bicycle came from, but it's as if it doesn't matter how much harder I pedal, I'm not going to move any faster. And that moves young people into a place that their parents and their grandparents never actually inhabited, regardless of background, actually. And you highlight some of the reasons why coming from a disadvantaged background would make this worse, but in many ways, the bigger your expectations from a middle-class background, the bigger the shock to the system when you find out that world doesn't exist anymore. Let me run something by you. The social contract, I'm reading this to you from another listener. The social contract has been broken. No one has job security, appreciation, progression, often even dignity at work. The cost of living doesn't match up. If you attempt to give everyone a middle-class education and then cut off the middle classes at the knees, how are they supposed to psychologically reconcile that betrayal? And they answer their own question by becoming trauma sensitized to further stress and so avoiding the whole damn mess through denial. And that's the people who perhaps have I don't like this phrase, but it's the only one I can think of in this moment, that they've given up.
Yeah, it does. I do hear it. It's easier just to do away with it all and kind of enjoy
exist.
Living at home. And
just exist at home. Find your pleasures. Find your pleasures in very, very small doses. What keeps you going?
Finding your pleasure in doses that are just so accessible. Yeah. As well. It's so easy just to sit and doom scroll. It's so easy.
And hours have gone. A whole day has gone before you know it. I think this is what keeps you going? What are you?
Well, I'm someone, I quite like routine. So I'm always trying to find a routine and even I'm sort of fitting into one with this post-work that I have. Yes. And just honestly, having these conversations, hoping that enough people understand it's not the issues within, because that's the other thing. I think a lot of young people like me are, it's easy just to think it's an issue with us. I'm doing something wrong. So it's just having these conversations, reminding other people that it isn't an issue with them. This is a systemic thing that they haven't caused, that they're unfortunately being burdened with. And just holding on to that hope that it hopefully one day will get a bit better.
Mate, you're a legend. You really are. And I will continue to have these conversations precisely because you have, and people like you have reminded me of the importance and the resistance, the necessity of resisting the temptations of in my day-itis, you know, because it has absolutely nothing to do with them, the situation in which they find themselves. And that's why I'm slightly encouraged by the 725 million quid that Rachel Reeves has earmarked for this scheme, because it comes from a place of believing that help is necessary, not from a place where conservative rhetoric often comes from, which is that these people only have themselves to blame and what they really need is a kick up the backside, or what they really need is this, that or the other. Yes, threats to remove universal credit are unhelpful, but most of the people we've spoken to who feel the torpor of this condition have actually been in work and yet still asking themselves, what exactly is the point?
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Sakir Starmer says apprentices should have the same respect and opportunity as everyone else. The government's aiming to reverse a 40% fall in young people taking up the training opportunities over the past decade. About 50,000 could benefit from fresh investment of more than £700 million. The Prime Minister's been speaking at McLaren's Technology Centre in Surrey.
To go straight in, start skilled working, learning, and in a work environment, which is different to university. It's a grown-up, serious environment. If you're in a place like this, you've got to be part of the team, you've got to be professional, you've got to be part of a team in the sense you've got responsibility, you can't not do your bit of the job.
The Prime Minister has insisted Ukraine will need hard-edged security guarantees as part of any peace deal with Russia. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, along with the leaders of Germany and France, will meet in London later. Kyiv is facing continued pressure from the US to accept a deal considered favourable to Moscow. Oleksandr Moresko is chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee in Ukraine.
I'm very sceptical, honestly speaking, because I don't see any changes in the position of Russian dictator Putin, because he hasn't abandoned his demands, which in reality mean surrender for Ukraine. And of course, we cannot agree to that.
Prince Harry's security arrangements while in the UK are reportedly under review. The Duke of Sussex had submitted a formal request to the Home Office for a new threat assessment. Harry says the current arrangements make family visits to Britain impossible. A number of people have reportedly been injured after a shooting at a shopping centre in Norway. Police say a suspect is being held in connection with the incident in Oslo this morning. And the Met Office has issued a series of weather warnings ahead of the arrival of Storm Bram. It has been named by the Irish Weather Service, with alerts in place across Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales and Western England. They include an amber danger to life warning for strong winds in northwest Scotland tomorrow. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 96.59. That is down 8 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather at the moment, dry with bright spells for many, but cloudy in southern England. Showers continuing across Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, 24 cans of Pepsi Max are just £7. That's down from £11.50 with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco. Every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 11 is the time. Should we do some politics? Let's start with a little quiz, shall we? I like to start the hour with a quiz this week. I'll probably have forgotten by Tuesday, and it's only Monday. Simon Marks will be joining us at 11:45 to have he's written a rather splendid article for the I newspaper, and that provides the thrust of what he'll be talking to us about. This extraordinary admission, is that the right word? Or saying the quiet part out loud with regards to Donald Trump's foreign policy, essentially an abandonment of Europe. It is no exaggeration, or if it is, Simon will soon set us straight, to suggest that and who here can truly be surprised? If I said to you, it looks like US foreign policy is now being written by the Kremlin. You remember that the so-called peace deal was essentially written by the Kremlin. I checked this out because a couple of you told me, and I thought it must be a slight exaggeration. But the thing, there were bits of the US version of the so-called peace deal that only made sense if you understood that the English was a direct translation from the Russian. So that Russian had been put through a translator, a program, AI, not even like a bilingual person. And the curious language deployed in the English version only made sense if you were looking at a literal translation of the Russian. Look me in the eye and tell me that while we were reading John le Carré novels or watching Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy on the telly or during the Cold War when Rocky was pummeling Ivan Drago, was that his name? The idea that an American government would essentially be copy, paste and translating a Russian document and then passing it off as a peace proposal. Utterly, utterly unbelievable. A lot of stuff I'm double-checking these days because I probably should have been aware of it sooner, and B, I think that it is actually relevant. Donald Trump paid for adverts, anti-NATO adverts in US newspapers in, I'm going to get the year wrong, actually, and I looked it up earlier as well. He paid for anti-NATO adverts in US newspapers shortly after making his first trip to Moscow. And we're going back, it's definitely a seven. It's either, I'm going to double check for you. It was either 87 or 97, but the story is here. This is from Associated Press. And the year is, wait for it, not immediately obvious in the article that I've just found. Where's the year on this? New York. This is almost as bad as the Otter monologue, isn't it? It's unbelievable. Anyway, real estate developer Donald J. Trump bought full-page ads in three major US newspapers to say the United States should stop paying to defend countries that can afford to protect themselves. And this doesn't go back to, like, his first presidential term or anything similar. It goes back to the last century, and it coincided quite extraordinarily with his first ever visit to Moscow when he was scoping out potential hotels. I just sort of thought, 1987. I think I may even have a clip of it for you. I think he may even have expanded upon the newspaper adverts that he paid for and spoken about it publicly. Isn't that extraordinary? No? Well, I thought it was. Anyway, this is the politics hour. A little quiz for you. Which party leader has been, quote, referred to police over missing election expenses? Is it A, Sir Ed Davey? Is it B, Kemi Badenoch? Or is it C, Nigel Farage? Still hiding, of course, as questions grow about his comments about everything from gas chambers to sending pupils of colour back to Africa that emerged over the weekend. And another story about him and the Russians, but I'll share that with you shortly. In the meantime, is it A, Ed Davey, who has been, quotes, referred to police over missing election expenses by a former colleague, I think. Is it B, Kemi Badenoch? Or is it C, Nigel Farage? And there is a whopping great big basket of nothing for whoever comes up with the correct answer. 8 minutes after 11. Actually, I think we've already got the correct... Have we already got the correct answer? Here is the correct answer.
Bird of Manning.
Oh, no, that's not the correct answer. That's just what you shout whenever you're asked uncomfortable questions. James, what's the square root of 121?
Bird of Manning.
No, it's 11, isn't it? Isn't it? Have you got a cure for the common cold?
Bird of Manning.
No, come on. This isn't fair. Honestly, have you ever conducted a radio phone-in expressing very strong opinions about a video you haven't seen?
Bird of Manning.
Never. No, I would not, no one would do that. That would be ridiculous. Come on. Anyway, why aren't you saying sorry for all the jokes you made about gas chambers when you were at Dulwich College?
Bird of Manning.
Oh, well, this is going well.
Bird of Manning.
What? No, stop it. What about the other people, your other protégés, close friends, colleagues, and members of the European Parliament who are now being investigated about apparently singing from the same hymn sheet as the one that got sent to jail for receiving bribes from a Kremlin stooge?
Bird of Manning. Bird of Manning. Bird of Manning. Bird of Manning.
Okay, well, I don't know if that was illuminating or not. 9 minutes after 11 is the time. And to Keir Starmer, we turn our attention next. Do you know, this might sound a little bit hard to believe, but I don't like it when I upset you unintentionally. I'm perfectly happy upsetting you intentionally, and it is almost impossible to remain true to the truth in this country at the moment without upsetting an awful lot of people. And it's true of the left and the right. But I don't like the place you put me in when I point out how suboptimal much of Keir Starmer's leadership has been. All right, that's all. How suboptimal much of Keir Starmer's leadership has been. You don't thank me. Well, most people do, but I worry about the people who don't. When I point out how many of the problems that they have are self-inflicted and avoidable, while completely acknowledging, I literally wrote a book, completely acknowledging the problems that they have with regards to a hideously biased corporate media, with, very, very deliberate cultivation of racism and sundry other bigotries and the way they've been rushed at breakneck speed back into the public space in order to distract the public from the real reasons why things aren't going well. I get it. I absolutely get it. But you cannot dispute the fact that an awful lot of the problems are self-inflicted and that the responsibility for them leads, at the very least, to Downing Street. And if you were to be completely honest with me, if the problems lead to Downing Street, then they lead to Keir Starmer. And I don't want it to be game over. I really don't. I kind of can't quite remember what it felt like to be bushy-tailed and optimistic, but I enjoyed it while it lasted. Which leads us to a story today, revealed by the Times, which shows us that Labour Together, the campaign group that was once run by Morgan McSweeney, the other person to whom most roads lead when you're looking for understanding of why so many of the government's perceived problems could be chalked up as self-inflicted. You have a campaign group once run by Starmer's chief of staff, has started asking activists for their views on contenders for the leadership. This coincides with a big interview in the Observer newspaper at the weekend. I remain completely baffled as to the circumstances in which the Observer was sold by the Guardian and bought by Tortoise, but I also remain very impressed by the way in which the Observer has emerged from that period. I like reading it. I also love what Carol Cadwallader and her former Observer colleagues are doing over at The Nerve, and they probably will be cross with me for suggesting or for revealing how much I enjoy reading The Observer, but I am nothing if not honest with you every morning. The Observer is doing some great work, and The Nerve is doing some fantastic work. Stuart Lee's column has migrated from The Observer to The Nerve, and you will struggle to find a better columnist working in the English language today. But this big interview, the big sort of set-piece interview with Keir Starmer, the launch of a Substack this weekend. Did you miss that? Did you see that? They've launched a sort of newsletter. The Prime Minister will write something that I think is a very, very good idea, although it needs a little bit of work. Well, do you know what I'd really like him to do first? I'd like his voice to sound the same in everything he does. If you're putting up a social media post that is Keir Starmer, supposedly Keir Starmer, make it sound like something you could imagine him saying. If you're writing a newsletter and sticking Keir Starmer's name at the bottom of it, make it sound like he sounds like when he talks. Just stop making it all look so obviously manipulated and contrived. Even manipulating and contriving now efforts to portray him as authentic. He is authentic. But stop pretending that you can somehow fake authenticity. Anyway, I digress slightly. Labour Together, the think tank that ran Sir Keir Starmer's leadership campaign, is canvassing party members on candidates to replace him. And there are eight, would you believe, that were named alongside Starmer. I mean, things aren't so bad that he's not even on the list. That's when you know times are tough, right? We're looking for the future leader of the Labour Party, and the current leader of the Labour Party is not actually on the list. So there were nine people on the list, eight of whom are not Keir Starmer. Five cabinet ministers? Do you reckon you could get them all? Unprompted now, I said, which five? Five cabinet ministers, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. Five cabinet ministers! No, all right. Shabana Mahmood, yeah. Bridget Phillipson, I wouldn't have gone for. Ed Miliband, yeah. Lots of people talking about Ed Miliband. And Darren Jones, Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister. Then you've got the outsiders, if you like, although Angela Rayner seems set to be making her way back into the cabinet sooner rather than later. Andy Burnham and Lucy Powell, who, of course, was elected deputy leader of the party in October, but I think was ejected from the cabinet not long ago. So there are eight contenders, nine including Keir Starmer, and there are two questions, aren't there? 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. I hate the first one, and I've asked it relatively recently, but I'm going to ask it again. How close to time up is the Prime Minister? 0345 60 60 973 for you personally. So this is an opinion hour. Last was lived experience hour. This is pure opinion hour. Next hour will be a little bit of both, as we turn our attention to one of the strangest front pages I can ever remember seeing, but which does actually end up posing quite a pertinent question for us to try to answer together. So I think the Keir Starmer question really boils down to how much of it you see as having been self-inflicted. And I don't have to talk about it, but I have chosen to because it tallies with my own feelings. I want to make that absolutely clear. You can accuse me if you want of adding to the problems by engaging in this sort of speculation, but I make no secrets of my political leanings, and I certainly make no apology for believing that even with one of the worst performances by a Labour Prime Minister in living memory, the options are immeasurably worse than what we currently have. But that doesn't mean that we have to stick with it. So it fits very, very much with my own political journey. Wes Streeting's obviously on the list as well. I only read out four. Don't panic. How likely is a leadership battle? How welcome would it be? I don't see it happening before next year's local elections. But the question of who you would like to take over, I think, is one that we can start answering now. So here are the contenders. Just to pick up on this, it's not Idiot's Corner. It's an easy mistake to make, Andrew. Keir Starmer wouldn't be in the list for next leader because he's the current leader. That's not true. You can get odds on who the next leader will be, and it will include the current leader. You can get odds on who the next Prime Minister will be, and it will include the current Prime Minister. That is not how either politics or humanity works. So, alongside Keir Starmer, we have Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, the Education Secretary, Ed Miliband, the Energy Secretary, and Darren Jones, the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister. They also added to the list Angela Rayner, Andy Burnham, and Lucy Powell. Who would you like and why? Now, a quick word to the wise, if I may. Also, stop sending me pictures of otters. It's just making me jealous. I know what they look like. I want to see one in the wild, not on my computer screen. But these kind of phone-ins, I like them, but they need a little bit of a fillip. It's funny, if I ask you a really specific question, what is it about Keir Starmer you really don't like, you will ring me in your droves, But if I ask you a very broad question, who do you fancy leading the Labour Party into the next general election, then you sometimes feel a little bit more reluctant to join it. I don't know why this is. Never holds me back. Did I say Philip? Did I say Bridget Philip? Bridget Philipson is the education. I'm getting cryptic messages now on my screen. I think everybody knows. Oh, a Philip. So now, oh, crikey. Well, so when I said a Philip, it begins with an F and it means a little boost, a little uptick, a little energy injection. What would you like to see, or who would you like to see leading the Labour Party, if not Keir Starmer? And remember, you can include Keir Starmer, 0345 6060 973. So what I want is whatever you've got, okay? Wes Streeting, Keir Starmer, Shabana Mahmood, Bridget Philipson, Ed Miliband, Darren Jones and Angela Rayner, Andy Burnham and Lucy Powell. I want to know who you want to lead the Labour Party, and I want to know why. And also, of course, you can ring in with people who aren't on the list, and we can have a little look at why it is that they're not on the list and why it is that you want them to be in charge. But it all needs to be underpinned by why. I mean, if you're not going to tell me that you want Keir Starmer to stay in the job, it needs to be underpinned by why we are approaching the moment where this becomes pertinent. Why we are approaching the moment where replacing Keir Starmer becomes likely. Plausible, it moves, doesn't it, from plausible to likely. And I think that we are going to reach that moment next year. I honestly do. I don't think it would be a good thing necessarily, and I don't necessarily want to, but I think next year we might be approaching the moment where replacing Keir Starmer moves from plausible. Well, it's gone from unthinkable when he came into Parliament with a massive majority to possible, which I would say we are at now, to plausible, I suggest, in the immediate aftermath of next year's locals, to likely by this time next year. Please ring me up and laugh at me for being hideously wrong should events transpire differently. But I think we've moved from unthinkable to possible. We're pretty near to plausible, and after plausible comes likely. So who would you like to see leading the Labour Party, and why? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. And in fact, the ease of getting through on phone-ins like this is greater than it is on almost any other. So I'm just mentioning that in case you're fighting shy or you've been looking forward to getting involved. You've just been waiting for the right opportunity. The number you need is 0345 6060 973. And the other angle you can adopt, of course, is this is an absolutely stupid idea and I can't believe we're even talking about it. All views welcome.
This is LBC.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode. Your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 11:22. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. In fact, you know what we should do? We should also have a phone in about who you really don't want. In fact, I wonder whether that might be even more interesting than who you do want. So I've given you a list of nine names. I think for the purposes of the who don't you want phone in, we'll have to confine ourselves to the nine names that are on the list. because they are currently the only plausibles. A lot of love for Jess Phillips coming in, but just in terms of, out of these nine names, who do you really not want and why? Because I'll tell you who divides opinion the most at the moment, although Shabana Mahmood is coming up fast on the outside lane. Wes Streeting really divides opinion among Labour loyalists as well. But so I want to know who you think should be the next leader of the Labour Party, if, and this is part of the phone-in as well, you think that Keir Starmer's days are numbered. If you're just tuning in, the reason we're doing it is because the campaign group that ran his leadership campaign is now canvassing party members on who might replace him. But I'd love you to tell me why some of these names strike ice into your heart. So why you might not be able to muster up yet much of a view on who you think it should be, you're absolutely adamant about who you know it shouldn't be. So of those names, Keir Starmer, Wes Streeting, Shabana Mahmood, Bridget Phillipson, Ed Miliband, Darren Jones, Angela Rayner, Andy Burnham, and Lucy Powell. Who do you want? But possibly more interestingly, who do you really, really not want? Alistair is in Chepstow. What do you think, Alistair?
Hi there. So I think that Keir Starmer should remain leader, and I'm not a Labour Party voter at all. But I think what went wrong in the Conservative Party is when you have when Boris Johnson, for instance, when he becomes unpopular, does something really wrong, you then have a revolving door of leaders. And it just seems to me that it's undemocratic. Now, I understand that we're voting a party in and not a person, but it just doesn't sit well.
I mean, Boris Johnson went because he couldn't find anybody in his own party to stay in his cabinet.
Right.
I mean, he literally couldn't form a government.
I
kind of get your point in the sense that you've elected somebody to have a crack at running the country. I think to extend your point, I mean, there's no argument at all that Keir Starmer is anything like as bad as Boris Johnson. He hasn't lost able to put a government together left, right and centre. But what you mean is continuity, this sense of chaos that ran through Westminster throughout the last five, six, well, post-Brexit, really, and that this would simply add to the idea that, A, nothing is permanent, and, B, everything is susceptible to flux and change and chaos.
Well, I think it feeds into this sort of managed decline. Oh, well, he's not doing so badly. You know, he's doing not very well at the moment. Let's get someone else in to continue this. And it just doesn't...
It's interesting that if you were a Labour voter and all you cared about was having the best possible chance in the next general election, then your position would probably be different.
Maybe. But I do, despite me not being a Labour voter, I do wish the best for the country and I do wish the best for the Labour Party.
And you think that would be continuity full stop, regardless of change? Yeah. Is there any name on this list that does sort of tickle your fancy, or is there any name that repels you?
Wes Streeting, I think, would be potentially good. Mm. But he's not really been, he's not been around long enough, really, he doesn't seem like a political heavyweight at the moment.
I don't know that we've got any political heavweights at the moment, to be honest with you. I think that might be part of the problem you're describing with this revolving door and this. What about Ed Miliband? He, I suppose, is the closest.
Oh, my God, no. Crikey.
Why not?
The whole climate change fiasco and the race net zero. I mean, come on. It's like a market trader. It's just... his market stall is about to fold. It's not working. It's not good.
Okay.
Out of all of them, I think the only possible one would be Wes Streeting, because he comes across quite well. You know, he comes across as if he's trying to do the right thing for the good of the nation.
I like Ed Miliband, but I probably agree with you about not having learned any lessons from the last time round. Thank you, mate. Thank you, Alistair. 27 minutes after 11 is the time. Simple question. Who's it going to be? Who is it going to be? And I think a possibly more interesting question, who on this list do you really, really, really not want? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. Felix is in Haltwhistle in Northumberland. Felix, what would you like to say?
Well, but Angela Rayner is the right person to be the next leader of the Labour Party.
How close are you to wanting another leader, a new leader of the Labour Party?
Well, I want to win the next election, and the new leader, of course, has to have plenty of time, not 100 days, like in the US.
Yes.
So, yes, we have to accept that we need a person a woman of the people to counterbalance this Farage nonsense of a man of the people.
And how close are you to running out of patience with Keir Starmer, if you see what I mean? Have you given up on the attractiveness of him?
No, in many ways, I never get enough of decent people. Okay. He's a decent, hardworking guy who's got everything in the right place. But in this media world, in this world of perception, you need someone who connects immediately with the voters who we are all working for.
Yeah, and is there anyone on the list who repels you, who you sort of think, not in a million years?
No, I don't think, look, Ed Miliband is, I think he's, contrary to your, the guy who rang in years before, I think Ed Miliband is incredibly important and charismatic in many ways and a good speaker, but he's lost. I mean, I would never go for someone who's lost before. The press.
I think I agree with you on that. Can we think of a precedent? Well, I suppose Joe Biden would be. Trump lost and came back as well. I don't know that either of those are going to fill us with a great amount of optimism or joy, either of those possibilities.
No.
I wonder how worried Starmer should be by this news. We can stick that on the list of questions as well. I would have thought very worried. I'd have thought that if the organisation responsible for running your leadership campaign is now asking party members who should replace you, then you should be at least a little bit worried. But of course, the plausibility of replacement depends upon the calibre of the candidate. And most of the analyses I've read have Ed Miliband among the favourites, and I completely agree with Felix on that. I don't know that any lessons have been learnt from the last time around, and I like the guy. I think he's an effective politician, but he's had a crack at it once, and I don't know that the voters forget things quite so easily. Chris picks up on a point I made earlier. Starmer isn't the problem, the media are. No, mate, they both are. I'm afraid the list of problems that could be easily typified as self-inflicted is quite long. Everything gets worse with a hideously biased media, but it doesn't create the self-inflicted problems. And the media is going to be in place regardless of who the leader is. So are any of these names likely to play the game better than Keir Starmer currently is? Wes Streeting, Shabana Mahmood, Bridget Phillips and Ed Miliband, Darren Jones, Angela Rayner, maybe Andy Burnham, Lucy Powell, 03456060973. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Volodymyr Zelensky is due to meet Europe's key leaders at Downing Street for talks on the war in Ukraine. Sir Keir Starmer's warned any peace deal with Russia will need hard-edged security guarantees for Kiev. The Irish Weather Service has named Storm Bram, which is expected to cause major disruption in the UK. A series of Met Office warnings are due to take effect over the coming days. The Conservatives have urged the government to speed up the establishment of a grooming gangs inquiry. The Tories, alongside a group of victims, have drawn up their own terms of reference for the process. LBC Weather: sunny spells for many, but showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, turning very wet and windy from the southwest as the storm moves in later. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC.
Do you have a co-op card or membership number? In July, co-op CEO confirmed that the personal data of all 6.5 million members was accessed in a major cyber attack. If you're a member, your information may have been exposed, and you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No. Styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year. Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Ow, ow. particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11.33 is the time. You know, talked in the last hour about not having done the what's the point phone-in whenever we address the question of so-called NEETs, young people who aren't in education, employment or training. We're definitely going to do that. It'll need a run-up. I'll have to be in the right mood for it because I don't want it to sound too bleak. You tell a young person who's, and we'll go through, we'll put together a real kind of list of potential options, of which one is being a NEET, and then the realistic alternatives to being a NEET. And you have to tell them what the point is of picking one of the other options. I think that's a much harder job than most people my age realize. 11.34 is the time. But another one that we haven't done, and we perhaps should have done it today, or at least made it part of this phone-in. There's still time, I suppose, although don't forget Simon Marks is with us in about 10 minutes. A lot of people who work in the weeds of politics, and we obviously don't, but a lot of people who are a lot more, so journalists who are on that beat, exclusively on that beat, they would never, for example, be thinking about spending an hour talking about vegetarian sausages, as I currently am, or the desperation to see an otter in the wild. But people who are really in it, and also party workers and pollsters, often express a degree of surprise about the very specific nature of Keir Starmer's unpopularity. And this isn't something that's answered simply by pointing out how biased most of our media is. On the doorstep and in the polling, and you can see it reflected in the statistics, Starmer excites a very peculiar type of negativity, a very peculiar negativity that I don't actually get. And a lot of the people I've spoken to who work in this field don't get it either. He really does. And maybe it's got something to do with social media. And the fact that I'm not on Twitter anymore means I'm not seeing the kind of bile and vitriol that I always see when Sadiq Khan, for example, is in the studio with me. But that's usually racist. So where does Starmer fit in? I don't get it completely. I'm cross with him. I'm cross and disappointed with Keir Starmer. But I don't feel anything close to hatred or visceral dislike. I'm cross and disappointed largely because of what I see as the self-inflicted wounds, the missed opportunities, and the querulousness. I'd go perhaps so far as to say cowardice. If you're going to get a coating from the right-wing media for having a beer or for going to the football or for, what was it, Rachel Reeves one recently, for renting out her house perfectly legally but being told by the estate agent that she didn't need something, so she didn't have it. I forget what the details were, but you're supposed to be absolutely furious about it. Much more furious than you are supposed to be about the fact that one party leader has just been reportedly referred to the police over questions regarding their expenses. That's not on any front pages today, as far as I can tell. But the self-inflicted stuff, I just wish they hadn't. I wish they'd avoided some of that, and I wish they'd been bolder. I wish they'd put income tax up. I wish they'd just taken advantage of the fact that if they cough, it's going to be treated like the biggest crime since Jack the Ripper. So why not actually do some things that will draw down identical levels of ire to tinkering with VAT on school fees or making farmers pay half the inheritance tax the rest of us do? Just go hell for leather and give the people who voted for you something that they wanted, at which point I'll probably get a few messages telling me they have done and you just haven't noticed. But I mean, we can both be a bit right, can't we? Tracy's in Ealing. Tracy, what would you like to say?
Hello, good morning, James.
Hello, Tracy.
I'm going to give up hope if Keir Starmer gets replaced, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I wonder about this position. Go on.
Yeah, I am, because I think that Keir Starmer has been the first leader of the Labour Party for a long time who has dragged the party kicking and screaming to look outward. They're still trying to pull it back inward, and they're very, very happy when they get their own way with something inside the party.
Yeah.
But they're not looking outside the party, and he does have that ability to do that. The problem he has is that he's not been in politics very long, and he doesn't really have any seasoned players around him.
What a great observation.
Like Alistair Campbell.
Yeah. I mean, the most seasoned player he's got is Ed Miliband.
Yeah. Oh, no, not Ed. He just doesn't.
Nobody
get it,
does it? Which is, I wonder if this is an unprecedented period in UK politics. Looking right, Pat McFadden is an old soldier, and that's probably why he's the one that gets wheeled out almost all the time.
Exactly, because he knows, you know, he's calm and he knows how to deal with things. But I noticed the others, they're not of that caliber. I don't want to.
Well, look at the Tories haven't got anyone. Reform are doing well in the polls, and they haven't got anyone either. The days of a political party having bottom, having depth, we're not currently living in them, are we?
No, I think Keir Starmer, though, if you look at things like Beergate, what he does, he lets everybody talk about him and put out misinformation about him, and he just carries on. And that works to a certain degree about some things, but it doesn't work for all things. And by the time the public have got the truth on something, his reputation is severely damaged. And he does that a lot. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't bat back things that aren't true. And so that's damaging to him. I think that's why the public have negative...
Yeah, he doesn't play the game. Well, there must be a little bit more to it than that. And it comes from both sides. People feel that he should have gone much further in opposing Benjamin Netanyahu's conduct in Gaza. So he'll be taking an awful lot of flack from what might be described as the left. And then people on the right are largely just attacking him because they've been told to by their opinion formers, because they've been much further down the road of opposing immigration than most people expected any Labour government ever to be. But it won't make any difference to the people who are relying on the front page of the Daily Mail or Billy Bunch of Numbers on Twitter for their political journalism. The question of hope would be, I mean, how bad does it have to be? Because his personal polling is atrocious, Tracy. There's no getting away from that. We can talk till the cows come home about why. But his personal polling is atrocious, and if you wanted to prioritise power over everything, then there might come a point in the next 2 years where you would either have to find a way of getting rid of him and clinging on to your hope, or accepting that you were not going to have power, you were going to lose power.
Yeah, the only thing I'm hoping for is that people can feel what he's doing. If he gets that right, they can feel that, and regardless of whether they like him, they like what they're getting.
Yeah.
And that might keep him there as the Labour Party rather than voting for Keir Starmer.
Yes, I mean, I have hope still. I've mentioned being cross and disappointed, but I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, calling for a leadership election. If anyone really does need help understanding why we're having this conversation, the reasons are pretty obvious. The campaign group that actually ran Keir Starmer's leadership bid are canvassing party members' opinions on who else should be party leader or could be party leader. Wide reports this weekend that Wes Streeting's allies were trying to woo Angela Rayner for a kind of dream ticket or a joint ticket leadership bid with a promise that she would be restored as deputy prime minister, although it would appear that she has proved less than amenable to those suggestions. Ed Miliband being talked up in various quarters as a plausible replacement as well. So the conversation, unfortunately, is unfolding regardless of what we choose to do of a morning, but that was a perfect contribution to a conversation that is recognising the necessity of recognising the reality. And the reality is that Keir Starmer's position is fragile. And Maria's argument that that should not be a reason to consider replacing him yet seems to me to be the winner. Ralph's in Swaffham, not far from where the Beaver is, up in Fakenham, Ralph. What would you like to say?
James, I'm probably your first virgin of the morning, of the week.
Well, I don't know about that, but you're very welcome, nonetheless.
Okay.
There were a few other first-time callers earlier, certainly in the first hour. I presume that's what you're referring to, unless things have taken a very unexpected turn.
Indeed, but no one claimed to be a virgin.
Get on with it.
Right, I've got two names to suggest.
Yes.
One is Darren Jones.
Yes.
Who would be my particular favourite.
Yeah.
The other one would be Andy Burnham.
I would pick them off from opposite ends of the scale. I think that in the event of a proper leadership bid, as in sort of Starmer steps down, various people throw their hat into the ring and there are television hustings, I think Darren Jones would really stretch his legs and show his class. I think he's a great operator and Andy Burnham, by contrast, has already had a crack at it, and you'd have to be his mum to think he did well.
Yeah, but that was back in the day, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but...
The reason I suggest those two...
Yes.
I think Darren is a good operator, he's intelligent, but we don't have an electorate, sadly, that's very intelligent in itself.
Well, the Labour it'd be the Labour membership that elected him as leader or otherwise, and I think the more they saw of him, the more impressed they would be, personally.
I would agree with that, but I think Andy Burnham has a wider appeal to people that... have got a sort of a 1 out of 10 level of recognition of politicians.
Yeah, and he's managed to sort of cultivate a king across the water kind of reputation, hasn't he? Despite having, I think it's fair to say, having made an absolute pig's ear of his last leadership bid, the membership might be more forgiving than the electorate. Do we know how he plays nationally? Do we know what, I mean...
He's got a good story to tell in Manchester.
Yeah, that's true.
That's something that I could get, that could, get him traction.
And how close are you to thinking that Starmer's situation is moving from defensible to indefensible?
Sadly, I think he's toast.
Do you really? You'd go that far? I'm not, well, obviously my toaster is set to a slightly lighter setting, a slightly lower setting than yours is. He's still warm bread under my reading of it, but toast is, 11:45 is the time. I don't know. I mean, it's all there, and it is going to be, unfortunately, because you'd much rather we'd all shut up and they'd get on with the business of governing, but that is the nature of politics, and particularly left-wing politics. This is going to be a conversation that gathers in volume as the months unfold, certainly in the run-up to next year's local elections, not one that diminishes. If I'm wrong, I'll be delighted. It's 11:45. Simon Marks is up next.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They come here because they know it's a soft touch.
Straight to the point.
How does this even add up?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
This is a Whitehall farce without any doubt.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T. Stop up on island fuel. Every 2 hours to I inspect tire pressure and tread. He prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
think. Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
A Southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doom-scrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers, here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in, kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 11:47. I'm learning. YouTube and TikTok havens a particularly specific brand of hatred towards Starmer, says this message, and they're in more people's views in the Times and Telegraph, etc. these days. I wonder where that is coming from. I don't think the suggestion that Russia is influencing Western politics more than at any other point in history is one that merits anything other than sort of wry nods and agreement now. If you're still clinging to the idea that we're not in a seriously dangerous and sinister scenario, then you are simply not paying attention. And just to that end, I wonder whether you are aware of the reception given to Donald Trump's new national security strategy by, and pay attention now, by the Kremlin. So the president, and remember, of course, that if you are troubled by the idea that the Kremlin are greeting Donald Trump's national security strategy with undisguised and undiluted glee, then you are suffering from what idiots like to call Trump derangement syndrome. If you think it's bad, for example, that the United States and the Kremlin seem to be in lockstep now on many of the major issues of our moment, then you are suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. It's very important that you remember that. But Dmitry Peskov, Putin's press secretary, has described this national security strategy as largely consistent with our vision. And by far the best account of this moment that I have found in any British newspapers today is in the I newspaper, and it is written by Simon Marks, who happily, felicitously, is also, of course, our Washington correspondent, and he joins me now. Do you, and I've asked you this 763 times, Simon, but here goes the 764th. How do you not despair at the fact that more people aren't seeing what you are seeing, given the fact that what you are seeing is absolutely crystal clear and happening in plain sight and truly bloody terrifying?
Yes, well, I agree with that, James. I mean, I actually think that in many ways, this 29-page national security strategy and the idea that any American president would distill their national security strategy down to a mere 29 pages is ludicrous. Normally, we're poring over very, very detailed documents that presidents put out. But the idea that an American national security strategy would be welcomed with glee by the Kremlin would be so horrifying, would be so unprecedented in terms of what it is saying, is obviously on the one hand deeply alarming, but on the other hand, it's absolutely clarifying, because this is the first day of our lives, the vast majority of us, when we have woken up and it is crystal clear that there is an American government in power that intends to torpedo completely the 80-year transatlantic alliance that has kept the peace in Europe since 1945, that is absolutely determined to interfere in the internal affairs of the UK and its European partners, and wants to bring about a situation in what this document refers to as patriotic political parties find themselves much more easily achieving power in Europe, a continent that this document agrees or argues is at risk of civilizational erasure because it has allowed so many immigrants into European borders that the entire future of the European project is not in doubt, but according to this document, absolutely bound to collapse, and to collapse in a way where the document argues that non-European populations will become the majority populations in so many European states that NATO will basically fall apart of its own volition, because for some reason those non-European majorities, whenever they come about, will not favour the idea of the mutual defence covenants that lie at the heart of the NATO charter. It's unclear why they wouldn't do that any more than it is opaque in this document what Donald Trump means by patriotic political parties.
Well,
but you
know,
don't have to be a swami to understand it. I mean, they don't think the Democrats here are a patriotic political party. So I certainly don't think they think Labour or possibly even Kemi Badenoch's Conservatives are patriots. This is an effort to sweep Reform UK into number 10 Downing Street. And it's all written down in black and white.
I mean, it's hard to know where even to begin because it is simultaneously dangerous and gibberish. That the idea that Europe is facing civilizational decline or that the European Union membership is problematic at a time when support for membership of the European Union in EU countries is the highest it has ever been, not least as a consequence of the Brexit that these clowns championed, and indeed that Farage, of course, who you mentioned quite rightly as a potential beneficiary of this dangerous gibberish, was a key proponent of. So what is the point here? I mean, civilizational erasure is, well, not that long ago, it literally would have been the language of a white supremacist in the darkest corners of social media. And, of course, it still is. It just happens that they're in the White House now.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think all of this is clarifying. Everything in this document and everything we've seen, particularly over the last 10 days here, the racist, bigoted, fascistic approach, for example, to Somalis living in Minnesota, yeah, now being dragged off the streets by ICE and Border Patrol agents as a result of Donald Trump's white supremacist position that he took at the White House last week, combined with this document, underscore just how far this country has moved officially. This is now official government policy. It echoes the Monroe Doctrine of 1823, which was the doctrine promulgated by President James Monroe that said the Western Hemisphere is uniquely America's sphere of influence. It sent a warning to European powers not even to think about messing with countries in Latin America. Of course, the European powers in many cases didn't pay much attention to the Monroe Doctrine. But there is a real challenge here in this document to Keir Starmer particularly and to other European leaders, although I think we've seen in the last few days that Emmanuel Macron of France and Friedrich Merz of Germany certainly are very aware of the extremely dangerous waters into which the transatlantic relationship is now sailing. And the challenge is you can't read this document, and I would encourage everyone to read it. It's only 29 pages, and I mean, it's quite entertaining in many ways, given the manner in which, as you've been reflecting, it has been written. The real challenge here is that openly the United States is talking about interfering in the affairs of our country and others, trying to foment in those countries that haven't left the European Union a popular uprising to try and persuade people to leave the European Union, and absolutely in our country determined to grease the wheels for those patriotic parties to find themselves in a position where they can walk into number 10 Downing Street and the great offices of power and state in other European countries as well. It's absolutely talking without naming those parties, sure, about bringing about an AfD victory in Germany, seeing Marine Le Pen win in France, Geert Wilders back in power in the Netherlands. That is the official strategy. And you know, I know they're all talking with Volodymyr Zelensky about the future of Ukraine. This document makes it clear, again, that President Trump's going to capitulate to Russia on Ukraine. But I think they're also talking about how on earth are they going to react to this realization that America no longer has their backs.
And if there were any room for doubt or hope, it has, as you point out, been summarily removed in the space of 29 pages. The historic import of the moment, you are, as I mentioned at the outset, one of the only people who seems, at least in print this morning, to be properly recognising it. What's it like over there? I mean, specifically, for example, I can't quite conceive of what would have happened if 10 years ago a US president came out with a national strategy announcement that was greeted with undisguised glee by the Kremlin. You take my point. What do Americans realize what's going on?
Well, certainly the foreign and defense policy community in this town recognizes what is going on. And I had messages over the weekend from one former State Department official who had served in previous Republican administrations, describing this document as shameful and disgraceful. And it's not just what it says about Europe that is so concerning to many of these people. It's the broader view. Any time in the past you've picked up a national security strategy by a previous president, it has focused relentlessly on the Ronald Reagan vision. America, the shining city on the hill, the beacon of democracy for other countries to emulate, accentuating the need to spread freedom throughout the world, to stand up for human rights, to stand up for political prisoners rotting in gulags in various dark corners of the planet. This document doesn't use the word democracy until page 16, and it only uses the word democracy three times during the entire document. In fact, it makes it clear that official US policy is no longer to spread freedom and democracy and protect human rights. Official US policy now is to accept that all sorts of countries have all sorts of different governing systems and national traditions, and it's not the business of the United States to interfere in those. And that's one of the reasons why there was an open bar all weekend at the Kremlin. if you look at the section on Taiwan, it will China. Have provided some comfort for President Xi Jinping, because the Americans are basically saying, yeah, we'll do a bit to defend Taiwan, but it's really going to fall to North Korea and Japan to take that on if they want to. If you're Kim Jong-un in North Korea, you read this document and you think, oh, terrific, all is good, because they're not going to come in and battle for regime change here. It's sort of dissonant, of course, with the plan to try and defenestrate President Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, but that is all about getting America's hands on Venezuelan oil. And all of that is revealed in this document as well. If you look at the section on Africa, which is tiny, and at the end of the document, it's almost like a footnote on page 29. I mean, Africa policy is basically to partner with countries in order to access their valuable minerals and their rare earths. That's the really the only interest that the United States identifies in the entire continent of Africa. We want to get our hands on their minerals. And this is all about commercial trading relationships within that prism of sort of American expansionism. He doesn't talk in this document about seizing Greenland or making Canada the 51st state or building Trump Gaza. But that's the tapestry that lies behind the words that are on this page.
Do you know, there's two stories in the news today that ostensibly don't have everything to do with this story, but in other ways they have everything to do with it. The first is Margaret Atwood, the author, telling Radio 4's Desert Island Discs yesterday that her Handmaid's Tale type regime now seems more plausible than ever. This is an authoritarian dystopia, of course, where women are forced to reproduce. She says it's become more and more plausible in recent years. And then, of course, Musk joining these bizarre attacks on the EU, indeed calling for it to be abolished, coincidentally, shortly after he was fined 120 million euros for breaching digital services law. So some of the answers to the question of why are they doing it can be quite straightforward. Some of them I find rather more opaque. Is it simply... obviously, the racism is both the beginning, the middle, and the end of much of this. But racism with no purpose. What is the purpose? If Trump intends to do whatever the hell he likes on the world stage, then he has to acknowledge that the other big autocrats like Putin and China can also similarly behave with impunity. Or am I missing something?
No, not at all. I mean, there are several analysts here. Again, at least one of them who served in a former Republican administration, who argue that Donald Trump's essential strategy is to become one of the big men on the world stage. He wants to be the big strong man alongside Vladimir Putin, alongside Xi Jinping. I think you're absolutely right to cite those messages on social media over the weekend by Elon Musk. He's now endorsing the abolition of the European Union. And whether it was coincidental that he began that campaign hours after this national security strategy was published or not, I'm not certain. But the national security strategy gave him the freedom to do that. We also saw an extraordinary message posted by the Deputy Secretary of State, Christopher Landau, this weekend. And to put him into context, this is the guy who goes to the airport. here in Washington to welcome Afrikaner refugees from South Africa, the only refugees the United States is currently accepting. He said the United States cannot pretend that the US and Europe are partners while allowing the EU's unelected and unrepresentative bureaucracy in Brussels to pursue policies of civilizational suicide, whatever that means. But what he's saying there is clear. The partnership between the United States and Europe in the form that we have all known it throughout our lives is, from his perspective, at an end because he thinks in some fashion the EU is pursuing policies of civilizational suicide. And that message undoubtedly was sparked as a direct result of the publication of this national security strategy.
Simon, you've done it again. Well, you didn't actually bring it in on time, but that's my fault.
I didn't.
It's a great piece. And if you can't read all 29 pages, then read Simon Marks in the iNewspaper today. I'll share a link to that article on my Blue Sky account later. I'm going to stop doing the Trump derangement syndrome, because if anyone's still using that phrase, then they are veering perilously close to coming into full-on Lord Hoar-Hoar territory. As the US president essentially tells Ukraine to go whistle, tells Vladimir Putin, your wish is my command, and tells its greatest historical allies in Europe a succession of lies about what they can see outside their own front doors and windows, but which people like Christopher Landau and Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon are telling lies so egregious they might as well have been, well, in fact they probably were, just lifted wholesale either from the Kremlin's propaganda handbook or from Billy Buncher numbers on social media with a bulldog avatar and 463 flags in his biography. It's bonkers. Every time you think you must be exaggerating the threat to our values, the reality arrives. And of course the people shouting the loudest about our values are the people who are cheerleading the, not even erosion anymore, the explosion of them. Madness. Madness. 12:04 is the time.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Sir Keir Starmer's warned Ukraine will need hard-edged security guarantees as part of any peace deal with Russia. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, along with the leaders of Germany and France, will hold talks at Downing Street later. Kyiv is facing continued pressure from the US to accept a deal considered favourable to Moscow. The Prime Minister says he is hoping to make progress this afternoon.
It is important that we bear in mind that this conflict is nearly 4 years old, that Russia is the aggressor. And therefore, if there is to be a ceasefire, it needs to be just, because Ukraine has taken heavy, heavy losses and paid a very heavy price for a war which was not of their making.
Sir Keir says he wants to see more apprentices reach the top jobs in Westminster. He's been setting out £700 million of funding for 50,000 more apprenticeships in sectors including engineering and hospitality. It follows a sharp fall in the take-up of the training route. Joey Barton has been given a 6-month suspended jail sentence for sending 6 grossly offensive social media posts. The former footballer will also have to complete rehabilitation work and carry out 200 hours of unpaid work. The former DJ Tim Westwood has pleaded not guilty to a series of alleged sex offences. The 68-year-old is accused of several counts of rape, 9 of indecent assault and 2 sexual assault charges. He appeared at Southwark Crown Court this morning. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has urged ministers to speed up efforts to establish a grooming gangs inquiry. She set out draft terms of reference for the inquiry, drawn up by the Tories and some abuse survivors.
We want to work cross-party with anyone who wants to see an inquiry done. We want to help the government to deliver this. But the inquiry and its terms of reference should not be written behind closed doors. They should be written by survivors who know what happened and who know what needs to be looked at.
Ministers say the Tories failed to take action while in office and they remain determined to deliver justice. The newly named Storm Bram is expected to bring strong winds and heavy rain to large parts of the UK. A number of weather warnings are in place across Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales and Western England. They include an amber danger to life alert in northwest Scotland for tomorrow. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 96.68. That is up a point. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells for many, but showers continuing in Scotland and Northern Ireland, then turning very wet and windy from the West Country later as that storm starts to move in. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to play BetVictor's daily free-to-play guaranteed prize wheel.
What guaranteed prizes does this guaranteed prize wheel guarantee?
The guaranteed prize wheel means you're guaranteed to win prizes, like free bets, free spins, exclusive offers and cash. Guaranteed.
What was it called again?
The guaranteed prize wheel.
Well, I guarantee I'll give it a spin.
And I guarantee you'll win a prize.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on BetVictor's guaranteed prize wheel. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Opt in and spin the wheel. Rewards expire 24 hours after claiming. Gambleaware.org.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 8 minutes after 12, and I mean, there it is. I mean, I always feel like we shouldn't really be talking about anything else, but unless you are Ukrainian, perhaps you don't feel in your waters the gravity of this situation, and we'll find out what Donald Trump's absolutely barefaced alliance with the Kremlin might mean for Ukraine. Some of the headlines, just in case you think Simon Marks was exaggerating in any way from elsewhere. New US security strategy aligns with Russia's vision, Moscow says. So, you know, it's not some gob on a stick saying, well, this might as well have been written by the Kremlin. This is the Kremlin saying, yeah, we love it. Kremlin hails Trump's national security strategy as aligned with Russia's vision. Because it has. I mean, it has literally said that it aligns with our vision. And then you've got the FT, US national security strategy calls for cultivating resistance in Europe. So democratically elected European governments are under attack from the White House, while their national security strategy is, according to the kleptocratic murderous regime in the Kremlin, very much allied with the kleptocratic murderous regime in the Kremlin. And you think that people who do this for a living have used the phrase Trump derangement syndrome with a straight face. The reason I'm, like, a little bit obsessed with that is because it's so obvious what was going to happen. Even those of us who are shocked by how far and how fast things have gone. The idea that you can pay any attention, even cursory attention, to the news, let alone follow the news for a living, and not see what has been unfolding in plain sight, it means one of two things. It means either you're comfortable with people being rounded up and disappeared for looking a bit foreign, you're comfortable with our greatest historic ally becoming an actual enemy of our interests while getting into bed with Vladimir Putin. You're comfortable with all of these things. You're comfortable with lies being told. Imagine if Lord Hawhor had been in the White House in the 1930s, attacking Europe, following, aligning ourselves. Imagine this headline, because I'm telling you now, it's perfectly feasible and it's a valid historical parallel. New US security strategy aligns with the Reich's vision, Berlin says. This is Putin's people praising what Donald Trump has to say about Europe. So it would be Hitler hails Trump's national security strategy as aligned with Berlin's vision. Those headlines. It's not even hyperbole to reach for these comparisons. Extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. But here we are. Still people in the UK media who think that warning about what Donald Trump is, was and always will be is somehow a mark of derangement or delusion. And it's people in Parliament who are probably still doing it as well. Absolutely breathtaking. 1930s Germany, US president comes out with a national security strategy that Adolf Hitler loves. 2025, US president comes out with a national security strategy that Vladimir Putin loves. Here we are. Merry Christmas. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. Right, complete change of pace now. We'll find a way back into some of that territory tomorrow. This is one of the strangest front pages I've ever seen, and I'm not going to attack it, oddly. Strange is not, by any stretch of the imagination, the worst insult that we can level at somebody in the media. And the Daily Mail, much as I despise almost everything that it has done to this country over the last few years, has always been very good at campaigns, decent campaigns, campaigns that are designed to improve the lot of their readership and sometimes by association the entire country. So they have joined forces with the Alzheimer's Society to draw attention to some of the problems that dementia sufferers endure. And I am here for it. I mean, it's a wonderful thing to do. But it's still one of the weirdest front pages that I've ever seen, particularly on a day when their friend in the White House has essentially set fire to the post-war settlement, essentially set fire to the post-1945 world order. I thought it was all the nutcases who were worried about a new world order, whereas in fact Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are bringing one in lockstep with each other. Nothing about that on the front page of the Daily Mail today. Instead, you've got a headline that states, public no longer trust NHS over dementia care. One in four of us are confident that we would receive good treatment from the health service if diagnosed. And the reason I think that's one of the strangest front pages that I have ever seen is because it's based upon very little by way of evidence or knowledge. There is clearly, or there should clearly be, concern about postcode lotteries, about diagnosis rates, and about dementia treatment. But if you'd asked me, this is what I want you to do. Imagine it was you, and you've got no real knowledge of dementia yet. You've been relatively blessed in the context of this particular condition. So my mum celebrated her 85th birthday last week. Happy birthday, mummy. And I am not remotely troubled at this point by the prospect of dementia arriving in our family, because she is as sharp as a steel trap. But what if she was? I would then embark upon the process of finding out what was going on. But if you find me 100 people, how many of them know enough to answer this question? It's such a weird thing for an opinion poll to address. Ask a bunch of people who've got no knowledge or experience whatsoever how they feel about dementia treatment. Would you trust the NHS to look after you if you got dementia? The correct answer is, I don't know. I've got no idea. So that, I think, is how we will move into this territory. It is something that every single family will be aware of. You notice it. I've just said that with Mum, I don't have any of these moments. I have them with myself sometimes. Sounds a bit stupid, but I think we're probably more aware of dementia than we were when I was young. So if I find myself struggling to remember something, there's a tiny little frisson of fear that it might be symptomatic of some deeper problem. I'm fairly confident that if the signs of dementia were to set in on me, you'd notice before I did. That's how Jamie Theakston had his cancer of the larynx spotted by listeners, you know, sounding so croaky on air. Listeners got in touch to say, you really need to get that looked at. And just downstairs in the, or upstairs, I always lose my bearings in this building. But you would probably notice if I started showing signs of early onset dementia. In fact, if I stick around for much longer, it wouldn't even be early onset dementia, would it? It would be perfectly feasible onset dementia in chronological terms. But we all live with it now. Yeah, if Mum forgets something that you, or she starts telling you the same story for the third time in an hour, there is a little tiny alarm bell that goes off in the back of your brain, isn't there? And that alarm bell gets bigger and louder the more evidence you encounter of the problems. One of the things I worry about is the geography. Not so much for my family, but for yours maybe, you know, Mum and Dad, especially if they're on their own for whatever reason, and you're putting in regular calls, but you can't visit as much as you might like to. And you just notice sometimes the gaps. Here's a thing. And this might really resonate with you if you've been through this. But you know how if you don't see your grandparents very often, they're always struck by how much you've grown. Do you remember that? Of course you do. And we've all been there. If you see them all the time, they don't notice that you're growing. But if there's a decent-sized gap between seeing someone, the first thing they'll say is, goodness me, you've grown. To which, as a child, the temptation was always to respond, well, yes, of course I have. That's what humans do, Grandma. But it's the thing that you notice. Because you have in your mind, it's probably different now with Zoom and what have you, but when I was young, you have in your mind an idea of what someone looks like. So if you go for a long period of time without seeing someone, you notice that they've aged when you're a grown-up. When they're a child, you notice that they've grown, that they have literally expanded upwards. I wonder whether we actually see the reverse of that when we go for long periods of time without catching up with parents or grandparents. And the thing you notice is the mental decline. So you catch up properly, you have a nice chat on the phone maybe, but only when you're really sitting down for 2 or 3 hours at a time, which means Christmas can be a very, very tricky moment. The idea kicks in that, crikey, things are actually a little bit worse than I realised. Or one sibling notices and the other sibling doesn't. I don't know. As I say, it's a largely undiscovered country for me, but it's a country that you need to know everything about in a nanosecond. How many times are the subjects that we discuss filed under things that you know nothing about until you need to know everything? And dementia is absolutely an example of things you know nothing about until you know everything. Absolutely everything. You need to know absolutely everything. So, what happens? What happens when you turn to... I find this question enduringly fascinating in a whole heap of different contexts. Because, I mean, even with flooding, I find it fascinating. It's kind of what society is, isn't it? The safety net nature of society means you never spend any time wondering about the state of the safety net until you need to be in it. So I don't know why I find it so interesting to ask you, what happens when your house floods? What actually happens that night? You phone, who do you phone? Where do you go? Where do you sleep? Who helps you clean up? When do you move back in again? What do the insurers do? What does the government do? That's floods. Floods make me think that. But today I'm thinking that about dementia. So you reach a point where you need help. Right? I know what you're thinking. Everybody knows the answer to this, because you do. I'm here to tell you, nobody knows the answer to this except the people who do. And you didn't know the answer to it until you really needed to know the answer to it. I sit here at the age of 53 with an 85-year-old mum. I've got absolutely no idea what I should do if I was worried about her ability to look after herself. If I was worried about her ability to use the cooker, especially if it was gas. I remember bumping into an old lady in my first year at the LSE who was just lost. Just wandering around down by the Temple Tube station. And you could tell that she was lost. She was just wandering around lost. And I asked her, "What are you okay? Can I help you?" And she just said, "I don't know where I am." But she could remember her address. So I don't know if I do this now necessarily. But I got in a taxi. I hailed a black cab. Gave them the address, immediately started panicking about how far away it was because I was a student and I didn't have much money. Happily, it was just up the other end of Holborn, living in a social housing block or a Peabody Trust block. I can't remember the exact details. Got her to her front door, and at her front door, she started looking frightened of me. So I, put distance, but this is going back 31 years or something. And I don't know. I should maybe have done more. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. But she must have had people that knew about her vulnerability. But she was still in a state where she could leave the flat, turn the wrong way, turn left instead of turning right, and be lost. Potentially for the rest of the day. Who do you call? What do you do? 0345 6060 973. What is the system like? I am not disputing the possibility that 1 in 4 people should be worried, or that only 1 in 4 people are confident about the treatment they will receive. But it seems to me to be a very dangerous front page for the Daily Mail to have published, because it will make anybody fearful of dementia terrified that they're not going to get looked after, where many will. So I don't want you to think that this is a conversation confined entirely to negative experiences or negative stories. This is a question about what happens. Dementia settles on a loved one. And you realise you and they need help. What happens next, and how satisfactory is the system under which we all live? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. Okay, that is the question. What happens? What is the safety net like? How much help is there when you suddenly need it? What do you find when you go looking for it? 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At Morrison's this Christmas, pick up the best signature collection Scottish smoked salmon with New York deli-style seasoning. Gently smoked over oak and cask chippings in our Grimsby kilns for 16 hours. See why it's good housekeeping approved. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores and online, offers and prices may vary online and in Morrison's daily.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. Drop up on island fuel. Rest every 2 hours too. I inspect tire pressure and tread. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. Safe trip begins with
think. Do the 4-trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
23 minutes after 12 is the time. What is it like? Is the question. Probably the question we ask most often on this programme. But I want it to be based upon actual experiences of reality rather than fear. And it may well be that the front page of one newspaper today is not problematic and that it is perfectly natural for only one in four of us to be confident that we would receive good treatment from the health service if we were diagnosed with dementia. But there's no point asking me how confident I feel because I've got no Scooby. So I'm asking you because you've been there and it is that experience that allows you to answer this question. Phil's in Manchester. Phil, what can you tell us?
Hello, James.
Hello, man.
First time caller, long time listener.
Welcome.
How's it going?
That's the rubric. Well played.
Thank you. So my dad was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's at the age of 55. He first got symptoms at the age of 55.
Right.
He began by losing small fragments of memory. He would, you know, get very severe anxiety about driving the car, these kind of things. He wasn't diagnosed for a long time afterwards.
Right. So you all just managed it, did you? You all, the family just rolled with it?
Yeah. So my mom was his sole carer really at home. There wasn't a lot of support available really in the way that you'd expect. So he started off going to a service for like counselling and sort of therapy,
right,
because of the anxiety. But over time...
But not specific to dementia then?
No. So okay. It wasn't until 5 years later that he actually got the Alzheimer's diagnosis.
This is partly because of his age, is it? I mean, would that be representative of everybody in the foothills of dementia, or would the fact that he was younger than the average have made it even harder, do you think?
I think that for the whole experience over the 13 years until he passed away back in May this year...
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, I would say that the whole thing was vastly misunderstood from the sense that he... You know, before he got ill, he could run 14 miles on a weekend and would be in the gym 3 times a week.
Wow.
And he would be constantly, eating, fruit for lunch. He was quite a healthy person. So
yeah.
He retained a lot of his physical strength. So when he was actually admitted into nursing care, it took 4 people to be able to restrain him.
Lord.
And he eventually lost his ability to communicate, to speak, to feed himself, that by the end of his life he there was nothing that anybody could really do to calm him down or restrain him.
And who, in whose care was he, and when did you make that call?
So So he was at home until 2021, and then I can tell you the date, and I can tell you all the details. He went into a...
You hung on for as long as you could as a family, did you?
Yeah. So at the start in COVID, he was isolated because it was just him and my mum at home until March of 2021. And then at that point, he began being passed around different services who basically said, we can't look after him. They didn't almost recognise that he was even experiencing dementia. So at one point,
that's because he was so young and physically robust.
And at one point, somebody was trying to push him to get a severe autism diagnosis, and we're like, no, he's definitely got early onset.
They didn't know what to do. They didn't know what to do. And then
he ended up in a mental health hospital in Stafford, near to where we're from.
Yeah.
And they kept him there for sort of 3 months, and he was really well taken care of.
Good,
actually, by the NHS there, and they were amazing. He was well looked after, and then it was when he went into private care where things started to go downhill. Actually,
and then paying a lot of money there as well, are you?
Yeah, about £6,000 a month. I could tell you a lot, James.
No, I'm sure, and we can have other conversations on another occasion. But I mean, there's two things here. There's the big picture. Yeah. But there's also the specifics of it. So I mean, some positives, particularly that mental health unit that he arguably never should have been in, actually.
No.
But the problems of early onset explain a lot of what you're describing, rather than what the experience would have been had he been 80 and obviously fragile. You might have had better experiences. But I hesitate to ask this question, but I sense from what you've told me that by the end, there was nothing left of him.
No, so... He eventually got what's called continuing healthcare funding, which takes a lot of effort to work through.
Okay.
But we watched him gradually deteriorate. So, you know, Christmas time, you can imagine, is a tricky one. Last Christmas, the last glimpse of him I really saw was getting some really sour pickled onions from a supermarket. and I used to take him food that he really enjoyed as his last glimmer of quality of life.
Got it.
And feeding him a pickled onion and watching his eyes light up was a moment that I'll cherish for the rest of my life.
Oh, mate.
But yeah, it was a slow deterioration, and you sort of experience a small death. Every time you visit, it's like a little death every time.
That's beautifully put, and no, not easy. But so powerful. Thank you. And that idea of, lordy, being on your tod, really, to deal with it until you are thrown at the mercy, really, of whatever systems are in place, some of which will be suboptimal, some of which will be up to the job, and some of which will be profoundly worrying, some of which will be wonderful. I don't know where you even begin to get a handle on what the national picture is. Phil, thank you. And I'm so sorry for your loss. I really am. The time is 12:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has called for hard-edged security guarantees for Ukraine as part of any peace deal with Russia. Volodymyr Zelensky and his French and German counterparts will hold talks with the Prime Minister at Downing Street later. Sir Keir says he wants to see more apprentices reach the cabinet. He's revealed plans to increase funding for 50,000 more training roles in sectors including engineering and hospitality. And Joey Barton has avoided jail for sending 6 grossly offensive social media posts. The former footballer will have to carry out 200 hours of unpaid work and also do rehabilitation work as well. LBC weather, dry and bright for many, patchy cloud over parts of southern England and Wales, showers over Scotland and Northern Ireland, rain moving in from the south towards the evening, a high of 14 degrees.
The cost of living crisis is having a real impact, pushing more people into homelessness and rough sleeping. That's why this winter we're shining a spotlight on homelessness across Britain. Thanks to St Mungo's, this Wednesday, Sheila Fogarty will be joined by Hannah Faulkner, Head of Rough Sleeping Services, to discuss how you can help this winter. That's this Wednesday with Sheila Fogarty. I'm James O'Brien. It's 12:31.
LBC.
With Lidl Plus, a Lini Prosecco Spumante is $4.69 and Comte de Senneval Champagne is only $9.99. Now that's a price worth celebrating. Lidl.
more to value. Be drink aware, 18 plus, subject to availability, exclude Scotland. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 31st of the 12th.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
Think. Do the 4-trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
At Vodafone, you can save up to £1,032 with the Samsung Galaxy S25 FE when you trade in an eligible phone. And keep you and your family connected this Christmas. Hurry! Offer ends the 17th of December. So, go online or in-store today. Vodafone.
Save £576 on 5GB airtime over 36 months. £144 on phone and £312 with trade-in. Phone cost is £534. Credit and trade-in checks and terms apply. Financed by Vodafone.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
33 minutes after 12 is the time. And that attacks on those boats in the United States still making quite a lot of news. We didn't have time to talk about it with Simon Marks, but rest assured that by any judgment or by any interpretation of international law, the administration is in extremely hot water. But of course, that is kind of tied to that conversation we had about the national security strategy. They are seeking to detach themselves both from the post-war settlement, from the post-war world order, and one has to imagine from international law. And by doing so, they also give a green light to other regimes, most obviously in Beijing and in Moscow, to continue to do exactly the same. It's so unprecedented. I find myself wondering what on earth we do to keep track of it from our point of view, the time we spend together. But that is not our concern this morning, or it's not our concern this hour, this afternoon. We're wondering about what happens. The Daily Mail launching a campaign, something it's very good at, but doing so in slightly strange circumstances by asking people who won't have any idea what dementia care in this country is like, what they think about dementia care. So I'm asking people who do know, who do have an idea, what is it like when you need help because of dementia in a loved one, with a loved one, and what do you find when you go looking? Emma is in Marlow. Emma, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. Hi. I've been on this journey for 5 years. My husband was diagnosed 5 years ago. He probably had it a year and a half before that.
Okay.
And he wasn't my husband before he was diagnosed, actually. But anyway, as soon as he was diagnosed, I realized what the journey was going to be, what the path was going to be for him. So I moved in, and I'm the only one who cares for him.
Wow.
And as soon as the doctor's door shuts, there is nobody there. The Alzheimer's Society send you booklets and they offer a couple of calls a year. Nobody gives you tangible, practical support. If you've got a couple of quid in your pocket,
yeah,
you pay for it all. So for the first 2 years, so it was 2020, first 2 years, it was just me and him getting the routine that I knew that we needed to do. Nobody tells you anything. Nobody tells you what to do. My aunt had it and I kind of saw how it worked. And you just kind of get on with it. I had my first away day in 5 years earlier this year.
Gosh. Who stepped in for that, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, it was my best girlfriend who lives in Australia. She's the only one that I would have trusted to look after him.
Right.
So she came over and she allowed me to go away and to be completely comfortable leaving him with her. And But, you know, I am, it's impossible. It's really hard. It's really, really hard. And there is no tangible support.
So the answer to my question is nothing.
The answer is absolutely nothing.
What then, I don't know if you know or not, but I mean, what if you weren't there?
He would have gone into a home and right. he would have died by now. So what I do is I reorient him round. I get him back. There is somebody with him all the time. If it's not me, because I do go out and I do some sport and I bring people in, and it's taken me a long time to find some carers that come in and they laugh with him and they joke and they do stuff around the house and they go for a walk with him. But you know, he was a very intelligent man. He still is.
Mm.
And you get lost thinking that he's still okay. 2 weeks ago, we were sitting in the kitchen and he looked up at the ceiling and he said, "Oh, I can see the planes landing at Heathrow." I mean, we're not far from Heathrow. And sure. I said, "Where?" He said, "Up there, on the ceiling."
Wow.
And I looked horrified. And then I turned to him and he said, "Oh, they're now disembarking." And I just said, "I wonder where they've come from." But there is nobody at every turn. There is nobody that offers anything. And if he's sick, he's been into hospital twice. He comes out looking and acting like he's in a Jack Nicholson film. It's hideous, absolutely hideous. So we don't go out for dinner. We don't get ourselves involved. We've never had COVID, hopefully, thankfully.
Sure.
Because I can't afford for him to be lost anymore.
And you, I'm going to choose my words very carefully. Because I'm picking up two things. One is the absence of support, but also your determination you only trust your one friend with him. So there might be other people listening who have felt that they had little choice or that they were more comfortable than you. Relying on other provisions, other people, other systems. But I mean, if you wanted help and your standards were lower, I hope that's not an infelicitous turn of phrase.
I think you've got it very quickly, actually.
Would it have been there then? Would it have been?
No, there's nothing. I mean, you have to source everything yourself.
Yeah.
You have to find everything yourself. You know, as I say, if you've got a couple of quid, you just have to get on and sort it out. But we are getting to the stage, I think you're absolutely right, we're getting to the stage now where I think I have to get away.
Sure, of course, and otherwise so you'll go. Girls,
well, I am slightly, I've always was a bit, but worse.
Of course.
And you know, the girls that come in now are like, "Emma, you really need to think about going away for a weekend every month."
Yeah.
But then the point is, what do I do?
I don't know. And how do you cut off? How do you relax? How do you not spend the whole time worrying about what's going to be happening because you're not there?
Absolutely.
This is an extraordinary testimony, but obviously I could work out the answer to this question, but I want to hear it from you. How surprised have you been by what you have discovered?
Not
at all surprised, because I would have been surprised. I don't know why I've got this idea in the back of my head that there's someone you call like Ghostbusters.
Because you haven't had any experience of dementia in your life, in your family. And I think my mum had a stroke and she got vascular dementia. And although there was a lot of support for her because she then had leukemia and she was surrounded by, so that's the point. If you get cancer,
it's there.
You get everything.
Yeah.
but if you have dementia, there is nothing. You might get a phone call, but I don't want phone call, you know,
You want help. You want someone to do what you're doing so that you can have a bit of time off from doing
it. I need to find another me, and my friend in Australia was the other me.
Just for a few days.
Well, yeah, it was a week, but
That's a few days.
Yeah.
Good Lord. And so two things I'm also taking away from this is that, I mean, if you had no money, or if there was no you, then you don't think he'd be here, do you?
He wouldn't be here, no.
Do the things that you could do, because you're so clear on what the consequences would be? Any sort of neat answer? Obviously, the campaign that the Daily Mail of all people have launched is needed. But is there any neat answer on what improvement looks like? What? I mean,
So on social media, what you find is that the Alzheimer's Society are always campaigning. They're always advertising.
Yeah.
They are, you know, we are helping people, you know, donate now because we're going to make somebody's Christmas much better.
Yeah.
But they don't. They don't.
They would probably, I mean, for legal reasons, I have to obviously stress that they would almost certainly dispute that. It would be very odd if they didn't. But your experience is that they've done nothing really to help. They've done nothing to help you.
They've done nothing, and I challenge them on social media, and I've got Facebook groups of people whose spouses have Alzheimer's, and everybody is in agreement that the Alzheimer's Society, and there are no charities that support us, that our local councils don't support us, nobody support, and I'm not deemed as a carer for my husband.
Why not?
Because I'm his wife.
Oh, I see. Sorry. So you are his carer. You'd probably be entitled to the 12p a week or whatever it is carer's allowance.
Absolutely, but I don't because I'm his wife.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't give a monkey's about 12p, but it's the recognition. And so I start to fight with the local council, and then I think, I can't, my blood pressure's high enough as it is, I can't do it. So we get to the point where we just let it go.
And of course that is the kind of $1 million moment, isn't it? In that because you can cope just, and that is a diminishing reality with, as the condition gets worse, then the urgency is not conveyed to, you know, HQ or whatever it would be, that the system needs to improve, because you will either be someone who copes or someone who doesn't, and neither of those scenarios are going to create the kind of improvement that's so obviously needed. Emma, thank you. I don't even know what to say, really. But people are texting in, but this would be a bit like, forgive the analogy, it's a bit clumsy, it would be a bit like you describing insomnia, and now my texters are saying, have you thought about counting sheep? Because I sense from this conversation that you've explored every imaginable avenue and found absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. And the Alzheimer's Society are going to get an awful lot of awareness and an awful lot of money and no tangible support for the people that need it.
And other people are getting in touch with different experiences, which is pertinent. And I'm sure that the Alzheimer's Society would dispute some of what you've said, but they can't dispute what you've experienced and what you have lived. It is, however, 12:45, and there is room for more. There is room for better stories, different stories, different stories. Thank you, Emma. 12:45 is the time.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
President Zelensky is here for talks with European leaders. Where is this going? Plus, speakers you find or watch your mouth. Joey Barton just learnt the answer to that question.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on. Oh,
thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware, no one's actually allowed to use. Or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. You can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyd's today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
12:47, I wonder what improvement would look like. Just on a slightly lighter note, a quick nod towards... is this Idiot's Corner or am I missing the point of John's message from Bermondsey? Something missing today. No attack on Nigel Farage from LBC presenters. Calm day at last. I don't know, are you complaining or are you... anyway, my bad. He has been referred to police over missing election expenses, as you should have heard, John, in almost every news bulletin that we have been carrying this morning. That is according to reports in the Daily Telegraph, of all places. But hang on, I haven't finished yet. Three more members of his various political parties, or three more of his MEPs, protégés, close friends, colleagues, whatever you want to call them, have been alleged to have followed the script provided by a Kremlin stooge to his very good mate Nathan Gill, who's currently in prison for taking bribes from that Kremlin stooge. So that's three more of Farage's closest colleagues who have been named, with the Crown Prosecution Service saying that they followed the script provided to Nathan Gill by the Kremlin stooge when they were giving interviews to a pro-Russian TV channel in March of 2019. That brings, I think, the total to at least eight MEPs elected for either UKIP or the Brexit Party, now known to have been the focus of efforts by Nigel Farage's very, very close friend and former Reform UK leader in Wales, Nathan Gill, to co-opt them into fulfilling tasks set for him by his Kremlin paymasters. So that's two stories that, well, I probably should have spent a bit more time on, John. And then, of course, Matthew Wright yesterday on LBC spoke to a very dignified chap called Yinka Bankole, who had been at Dulwich College with Nigel Farage, and who remembers the sixth former telling him to go back to Africa. That was on Saturday, I beg your pardon, on LBC. I will urge you to go to the LBC app and have a listen back to that conversation, in the context of Farage claiming, of course, that he was never made racist remarks in a malicious or nasty way, adding that he never directly abused anybody while he was at Dulwich College, and quite possibly just adding as well,
Bernard Manning.
Siobhan is in Gravesend to steer us back to the dementia conversation. Siobhan, what would you like to say?
Hiya, James.
Hello.
I really want to genuinely thank you for your journalism. It keeps me sane, particularly around racism and the rise of the far right. So I'll just get that out of the way because it really does keep me sane, literally.
Lovely thing to say. Thank you.
Coming at this as a professional, I hope some of your listeners, previous callers were still listening.
Yeah.
There is a service. It doesn't cover all GPs, but you know, you get like social prescribers.
Yes.
Many GPs have dementia coordinators, which is what I used to be.
Okay.
This scheme was piloted in 2021. Now, it is eventually supposed to cover all areas, but I don't think it still does. And we would cover a huge area. I covered a huge area in Kent alone, and we would signpost people. We'd be a friendly ear on the phone. We even used to do dementia assessments. But what we did at the start of that was we took a survey of, because I worked for a charity.
Oh, yeah.
Although we were tendered by the NHS. And we rung 200 people who cared for people with dementia. So, you know, spouses, children.
Yes.
And overwhelmingly, they were dissatisfied. I mean, many hadn't even had their loved one referred to a memory clinic. It was kind of just an informal diagnosis from the GP. And then they were kind of left to it.
And that, because I suppose because it's incremental, That's part of how this stuff happens, rather than reaching immediately for, you know, condemnation. Because in the first instance, everybody's going to be able to cope with it, aren't they? And usually with a diagnosis, you sort of, yeah, they're a bit forgetful. But it's as it gets worse and worse and worse, the support doesn't suddenly appear or improve.
Sure, and I think services have declined, particularly since the pandemic. There was a lot of memory cafes and things like that.
Oh, really?
That just didn't, which are lovely things. You know, you could take along your husband, your wife, your mum, your dad, and, you know, meet other carers, you know, and other people with dementia, board games and, you know, music and things like that. But unfortunately, a lot of the services, you had a guy earlier whose dad had early onset, a lot of the services do tend to be directed and focused on older people, you know, like day centres and things like that. And I've worked with people with dementia for 20 years, and unfortunately, the symptoms of early onset dementia tend to be a lot worse, and that, possibly because people's physical health is still in its prime.
If I put you in charge, what would you do first?
Oh, goodness me.
No pressure.
What would I do first? Well, I think the referrals to services on diagnosis aren't there, but like you say, you're not going to be in need of those services straight away, and I think, like you say, the changes are so incremental.
Yeah.
You almost kind of just become so used to it, and a lot of people with dementia feel like that they're the only ones who will look after their loved one with the kindness.
I got that from Emma. I thought Emma put that really powerfully, or certainly conveyed that sense really powerfully, and also created this idea in my mind of, I can cope, I can cope, I can cope, I can cope, I can cope until I can't cope. And because it creeps up on you like that, you don't always notice it as quickly as you might.
All informal carers, you know, have this mindset no matter what issues are. And what I said to your producer as well, because most people are elder, a lot of their main carers will themselves be
older. Of course, it'll be a partner, won't it? It'll be a wife or a husband or a partner.
Yes, and our surveys, we spoke to people in situations that you couldn't imagine, you know, where the carer was someone suffering with a life-limiting or even terminal disease. We had a guy who was a carer for his son who had quite a profound learning disability.
Right.
Now, he had dementia, and I actually spoke to the person with dementia because it happens to be him who answered the phone, but he was still had the insight. But there just wasn't the appropriate help there, and I was really dismayed actually. And the actual gravity and size of the job in front of me. I only did it for 6 months. I've worked with people with dementia for a long time.
Sure.
It's just not enough to have two people covering a ward of nearly 200,000 people.
Good grief! And of course, it would be obvious to you and to most people listening. But of course, what I've only just remembered is that this is an absolutely clear consequence of us living longer, of us all living longer.
There'll be one point. There's just under a million of us now with dementia in 2050. Now I'm the same age as you,
right.
So we may well be in this cohort.
Sure.
But there'll be 1.6 million of us in 2050 with this disease. And
it's only going to get bigger and bigger, which means if they do anything to address it and to look after it, it's only going to cost more and more. It's going to need more and more money and more people to work in the sector.
And we're deterring, you know, some of our, you know, the backbone of our care services hadn't been a care manager, was international staff.
Absolutely. I wonder whether the Daily Mail will pick up on that element of the story in their continuing campaign, the idea that many of the people that we would have been looking to look after people with dementia have been invited to sling their hook. Under not just, of course, previous governments, but arguably under this one as well. Siobhan, extraordinary stuff. Thank you. And grim, actually. Fairly grim. On the context of where do you go, where do you turn? A couple of texts that I feel I should read out. Fred in Guildford says, I'm not associated with the Alzheimer's Society, but I feel compelled to point out that they're not a care provider or a care funder. They fund research, they offer advice, make companion calls, raise safeguarding concerns, operate a helpline and lobby the government. And on a similar theme, Roz has been in touch today, just wanting to add to this conversation. My mum sadly passed away 6 days ago. Oh, Roz, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. This can't have been an easy listen for you, given that recent loss. She spent her last 7 and a bit years in a residential nursing home. She was diagnosed 11 years ago. The 4 years before the placement in a home were the most difficult. It's so sad and worrying to know that 11 years down the line, things are still impossible for people and there's no easy way to navigate the system. This is considering our numbers of dementia are increasing. Well, we just got given the heads up on that. I did get help from forums and Age UK, invaluable help. The Alzheimer's Society were helpful too, but there should be an algorithm that once a diagnosis is given, people, relatives and carers follow. My mum's home in Twickenham in London was exceptional, and if it wasn't for them, she would never have reached the ripe old age of 81. I mean, it's like a couple of the things we've talked about in recent years. Care homes in general, actually, but oddly also the plight of NEETs, the things about which we know nothing until suddenly we need to know everything. But as a couple of people have pointed out in no uncertain terms, this is yet another reminder of how demographic change demands demographic change. More and more people needing more and more help means more and more people providing more and more help. And we have turned ourselves into a country that is currently repelling the people who might provide it, many of the people who might provide it. That's it from me for... Oh, hang on, no, John in Bermondsey complaining, or I think perhaps celebrating about the fact that we hadn't done much Nigel Farage coverage today. I should tell you, John, that a Reform UK councillor up in Durham, he sits on Durham County Council, his business has just been fined £40,000, mate, for employing someone that had no legal right to work in the UK. So that's four stories for you today without even... searching, all demonstrating just what a wonderful idea it would be to put that chap and his colleagues in charge of the entire country. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player or on the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories, put your opinions, news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks very much, James. At 3 today, what can you say and when can you say it? Joey Barton has been given a suspended prison sentence for 6 social media posts found to be grossly offensive in court. A Cardiff dad has been banned from coaching his daughter's football team after describing migrants as scumbags and psychopaths in social media posts. So where is this line that we need to draw? At 2, how did we lose the art of giving young people the skills they need to get a job? Sounds simple, but boy, did we lose that art. The government trying to wrest it back. Straight up after the news, though, if the starting point is Russia needs something from any peace deal with Ukraine, what would that something be? President Zelensky is in London this afternoon. We'll have all the latest on that to boot.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Volodymyr Zelensky and his French and German counterparts are arriving in Downing Street for talks with the Prime Minister. Sir Keir Starmer has called for hard-edged security guarantees as part of any peace deal with Russia. The Ukrainian president is facing pressure from the White House, with Donald Trump claiming he hasn't read the latest plan to end the war. Mr. Zelensky says he's awaiting a full update from negotiations in Florida.
I expect detailed information from them on everything that was said to the American envoys in Moscow and on the nuances the Americans are prepared to modify in negotiations with us and with the Russians.
Three asylum seekers have pleaded not guilty to raping a woman on Brighton Beach earlier this year. The Iranian and 2 Egyptian nationals have been charged with 2 counts each and appeared in court earlier. LBC's Benji Hire has more.
A spokesperson for the Home Office previously called the allegations shocking and outrageous. The Home Office also said all 3 men arrived in the UK via small boats and at the time had pending decisions on their asylum claims. They'll remain remanded in custody until the three-week trial scheduled for this coming March.
Joey Barton has avoided jail after sending grossly offensive social media posts to three people. A jury previously found the former footballer had crossed the line between free speech and a crime. He'll have to complete rehabilitation work and carry out 200 hours of unpaid work. The Prime Minister says he wants to see more apprentices in politics while announcing an increase in funding. £725 million will be spent on creating 50,000 more positions in sectors including engineering, AI and hospitality. It follows a sharp fall in the take-up of the training route. And the newly named Storm Bram is expected to bring strong winds and heavy rain from tomorrow. A series of Met Office warnings are due to take effect over the coming days. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was unchanged at 96.66. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and bright for many, patchy cloud over parts of southern England and Wales, showers over Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This Christmas at Tesco, get 12 bottles of Peroni Nastro Azzurro beer for just £13, down from £19.50 with your Tesco Club card. Tesco, every little helps. Drink aware 18 plus. Majority of larger stores ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. All eyes are on Downing Street in the UK, at least this afternoon, in Europe this afternoon. The Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, has been greeting European leaders as they await the arrival shortly of President Zelensky of Ukraine. Presidents Macron and Chancellor Merz of Germany are in London as well over this peace push that's taking place. We know that the European and the American sort of offers, suggestions, deals differ in a number of significant ways. And I, in a sense, my question to you today is, if we agree that for this war to end, you know, all wars are different in some respects, but for this war to end, does Russia, does Vladimir Putin have to win something? Does he have to get something out of this? And if so, what should that something be? 0345 6060 973, the number to call. You can text 84850. I think we've moved on, feels like we've moved on from he should get nothing, absolute defeat, absolute victory for Ukraine is the only answer. I don't think it was ever going to be the outcome here, but we're nowhere nearer really to an outcome yet, or despite everybody's efforts. The leaders will discuss those latest Ukraine peace plans drafted during talks between Ukraine and US officials in Florida last week. And we had the previous suggestions and deals from Europe as well. On Sunday night, Donald Trump claimed President Zelensky's negotiators love the latest plan, although President Zelensky has pushed back against that a little, saying, "I haven't seen it in total yet. Some elements of it can only be learnt about and discussed face to face, not necessarily online." Perhaps not something Donald Trump agrees with. He said he will be briefed by his negotiators, saying some things can only be discussed in person. And then, of course, there's the whole question of Europe's role in all of this. So if our starting point is that Russia needs to win something here, it might not be your starting point, in which case feel free to tell me that. But if it is, I think it is a realistic starting point, then what would that thing be? 0345 6060 973. Our reporter Shivani Sharma is down in Downing Street. We'll speak to her when and once President Zelensky has arrived. Before that, though, Nicholas Williams joins me, former UK Ministry of Defence, EU and NATO official, now Senior Associate Fellow of the European Leadership Network. Nicholas Williams, good afternoon to you.
Yes, good afternoon.
First of all, do you accept my opening premise that Russia needs to win something here?
Well, Putin wants to win everything. And I think the Trump plan, now 20 points from 28, gives him most of what he wants, except the key point, which is territorial concessions, and also the size of the residual Ukrainian army once a peace deal is accepted. Mm-hmm. So he's almost got everything he wants.
Is it fair to say that beyond that, what he really wants is no meaningful Ukrainian state?
Yes, exactly. No meaningful state. What he wanted politically was the neutralization of Ukraine, which is accepted. The demilitarization of Ukraine, which I think is not accepted by the Ukrainians. And thirdly, what he calls the denazification of Ukraine, which means, as you say, non-meaningful Ukrainian state, friendly to Russia and Russian culture. So this denazification is, as you say, a less than meaningful Ukrainian state, friendly in all respects, particularly cultural, but political as well, to Russia.
And just explain to the uninitiated why Putin uses that term, denazification, and why it is so redolent, perhaps on Russian ears, in a way it wouldn't be everywhere else.
Well, the West has ridiculed this idea of denazification. But as you say, it means something specific to the Russians. And what it means is that the Ukrainians should be friendly to Russia, because Hitler's idea in invading Russia and USSR was an anti-Slav move. Mm. And we consider Hitler to be primarily concerned with the Jews. The Russians consider him primarily concerned with the subjugation of the Slavs, and he doesn't want, and the Russians don't want, a Ukraine friendly to the West, which they think will be unfriendly to Russia.
Because it's an incredibly brutal term, isn't it, denazification, for Ukrainians to hear?
Yes, it's incredibly brutal and it's inaccurate, but it means something specific to the Russians.